I'm out here just doing this pop star dance. These fucking legendary pop tarts are so great. Power Project family, I hope you guys are doing well today. But I want to show you guys from Legendary Foods, we have the Tasty Pastry. Now, you know, these things are 20 grams of protein and 5 grams of net carbs. Sometimes you're dieting and you want to be able to have a good, tasty snack that doesn't taste like cardboard. Well, this baby, it's not even warmed up. Imagine if you warm up this freaking tasty pastry in a microwave for like 20 seconds. I got my coffee right here, tasty pastry. I'm living life and you guys can too. Andrew, tell them about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the other thing about this, so again, and Sima just mentioned 20 grams of carbs for a total of 180 calories for the whole thing. Oh. And the whole thing tastes amazing. If you guys haven't tried it, you need to right now. Head over to eatlegendary.com and at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT to save 20% off your entire order. They have those tasty pastries. They have all kinds of amazing flavored nut butters. They have almonds. They have all kinds of stuff. And you cannot help but laugh when you say nut butters.
Nut butters.
So yeah, you guys need to head over there right now. Eat Legendary. Food, eatlegendary.com. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
We're going
to
sample your laugh today.
And okay, you know what?
Use it for future
podcasts. I'll be entirely honest with you. I am just now, I am definitely feeling something from that.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's quick.
Hit you really quick.
It's
yeah.
quick.
What yeah. is it?
It doesn't really matter.
It's already over. It doesn't matter.
Your clothes will be off in like 10 seconds. It's going to be great. Wake up.
What happened?
Well, yeah.
like Will Ferrell from Old School. It was like, I blacked out. What happened?
You know what? It is actually really funny how you constantly just give people this and they're guests. And since they trust you, they're like, okay, I'll drink it. And they don't realize this is a substance. it's just put it down.
It's like the roof of my mouth is numb.
And you still kept drinking it.
And I drank the whole thing.
Truth
trust.
Truth serum. Yeah.
It's not bad for you though.
I figured I was given protein gummies. I figured everything here is probably going to be on par.
Yeah.
We should spike. Mind Bullet with like psilocybin.
Oh yeah, throw some of that in there.
Hey, people wouldn't realize. They'd be coming to like
they might.
Fucking realizations.
Yeah, like during the podcast.
That'd be great.
You ever do any microdosing?
We've done it on the podcast.
I mean, I know I haven't, but I've heard there are benefits to doing small doses of psilocybin over a long period of time.
Yeah, it's great. I've been messing around with it for maybe like about 2 years. 2 years or so, on and off. Yeah. I don't feel like I think that people are really scared of these things, and it's always good to be cautious of everything. Sure. But from what I've seen, from myself personally, I guess I'll just go off of that. Mm-hmm. I haven't noticed anything real negative from it. However, when I do mushrooms, I end up with anxiety, which I don't normally ever have. So it's interesting.
Interesting.
But it helps to make you like introspective.
Yeah.
And while I'm not someone who is really ever deals with anxiety or ever deals with depression or I'm usually pretty up. I'm usually pretty happy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the reflection of myself would be like, hey, dude, actually, you do go pretty hard and you do give a fuck because you're why else would you be pushing so hard on so many different things all the time? So
right.
I feel very relaxed. I feel very good. But there's something inside of me that is pretty fired up and pretty driven. So I think something like mushrooms is nice because it gives me perspective. And then it's like, you could think you're as cool as you want, but when you do something like mushrooms, the mirror
start
is
to think about
the mirror that you see is very real. And then you kind of recognize, you're like, oh shit, like it's not me. I have a lot of great people around me, you know, and I've been very fortunate. It kind of helps you with a lot of that shit, which I think is great personally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could see that. I've had similar experiences. I remember the very first time I ever tried it was during the age where Pokemon Go was in existence and kind of popular. Yeah, and I just remember.
How old were you when
that
came out?
You got a fuck ton of Pokemons, didn't you?
I had. Oh, I was all about it. I was obsessed with it.
Same here.
To an unhealthy degree.
Me too. Well, we were walking.
And that's how I justified it. I'm like, yeah, I should get out, and this is great, a good way to get out into the community and experience the people that will do this. You don't want to meet the people that are getting out to get Pokemon. Yeah. You don't want to meet those people in any circumstance. And I realized midway through this trip, wow, I'm literally walking around chasing nothing. Like, I'm wasting so much time looking for nothing.
Did you put any money in it? Did you buy?
Yeah.
Me too.
I put money into it. I put hundreds of dollars into
same
it.
Same here. It was bad.
But in that moment, literally, I realized, I'm like, okay, it? Nope, I'm done. Forever. Yeah. I can't ever go back to that. That was a giant waste of time.
The way that game multiplied, they tried to put it in perspective to like Facebook and all these things that multiplied and grew. And it grew
Meta,
like...
It's going to do something. They're going to do something new with Meta, shit. I heard. It's going to be... They're going to collaborate.
Oh my God, that's not good.
That's well, not I mean, good. Well, none of it is cool, good.
But...
Kind of. I don't know, man. I used to be like on the about the whole thing. Well, maybe it's good, maybe it's not, but it's cool. Now I'm thinking it may just be bad.
It gets people walking, though. People that wouldn't be usually coming to the gym and doing, they'd usually be sedentary on a video game.
Yeah.
Now they're outside walking, getting sunlight, catching Pokemon. I mean.
you can't hate it all the way.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Do you have your avatar picked out already because you're into these comics and stuff?
For the meta?
Yeah.
No. I honestly, I've steered clear. And so far, it hasn't really impacted any business. You know,
right,
transactional
right.
worlds and all yet, but I'm told it will.
Yeah.
Everyone who knows anything about it tells me that there will be some kind of a, you know, meta, and then IFTs will all come together, and it'll be, that's how business will eventually go that direction. So, but for now, it's not. So, you know, what we have is what I'm focused on.
What were you doing with the action figure on your IG that I saw the other day? What was going on with that? You were like painting it and fucking
with yeah. it? That. It's funny, you know, I gotta credit Eli. For
Are
that
you
one.
Artistic?
Yeah,
I can't draw for shit.
Man. Really?
Yeah. How about you? Can you draw?
No.
Yeah, you probably can.
Well, man, I used to be able to, but I haven't drawn in a long, long time, so I don't know if I can. Anymore.
For me, I've always found, because I never played video games, it was never really my thing. I like movies, but for me, artistic expression has always kind of been that yin and yang for me. I always find balance in my life by doing something like that. For everything else in my life, it's so, you know, it's living in the gym, it's doing school, it's, you know, building business, whatever it is, it's always just go, 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 go. But for that, I can kind of just quiet it all down, you know. Turn on some music and just, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you made Venom and it looks sick.
Yeah, no, that was a fun one. What I do, what I have found is that I got a 3D printout and I will print these files and then I will paint them and then I'll hang them in the gym.
Wow.
And what's fun about that is that
it looks awesome.
Whoa. Doesn't it look cool?
It does.
Yeah. On camera, it looks like it was gigantic. So when I seen it in the little box, I was like, oh. Okay.
Well, yeah. It's kind of neat when you do something yourself, too. Like, I don't know, there's something...
100%.
Like when someone asks you, like, hey, what's fucking Venom doing hanging off the squat rack?
Yeah.
Then you're like, well, I don't know. I tinkered around with that yesterday.
Yeah. I put it together. And the cool thing is it's kind of a meeting of both worlds. I can now use what I used for kind of relaxation purposes, just set up a camera, do a time lapse. And now I can use that for content or for the gym, and it kind of fuels both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do that and sort of justify it to myself a little bit better as not so much a waste of time. But Eli's the one, he told me, he goes, look, you know, you are in the process of making something that people want to see, like you. People want to see the odd things that you like to do. And they want to see how, you know, your vision for not just fitness, but for life, and how you're making this brand kind of fun. And for me, there's nothing that's ever been more fun than comic books and
cool.
Getting all, you know, nerdy about it. And, you know, Batman, of course, but that side of things is
were you
so
maybe
much fun.
A little reluctant to share that just because it's like it's more of a hobby and it's like it's more for you, right? So sometimes you don't want to share everything on social media.
Nah, it was kind of the one thing that I sort of like didn't like, and I didn't.
Thanks a lot, Eli.
I wouldn't say it was private, but it was kind of just, it was something off the wall that I didn't think a lot of people knew that I did. For a while, I actually started painting the Warhammer miniatures, like the little tiny ones that you see in, it's a board game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I painted that since I was a little kid. I painted it kind of weirdly professionally. I used to paint them for the shops and stuff, and they display them. All right,
this is getting kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's about to get much more nerdy. Get
it's
ready.
Really bad. And that's as a kid, I did it for years, and then I obviously stopped because, you know, why would I keep doing that? And then kind of just came back to it with the 3D prints. I can't remember who I first saw that did that. 3D printers have kind of jumped off recently.
That's really cool that you can 3D print your own shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the files, there are companies now that specialize in just Marvel or just DC, and they make these really detailed models, and you can scale them. Dude, you can scale these things to be this big.
Wow.
And I figured out a way to just kind of, I took a model stand, turned it upside down, drilled holes, and then just anchored it and put some LEDs, and now they look sick.
Dude.
It's so much fun. And it would be, I mean, you guys could literally hang some up in here. They're a lot of fun.
Help us figure
that
out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, all right. I got you. Cool. I'll get you all one.
Dog, you think you're nerdy. Okay. Well, I mean, you see these little pop things?
I did see those little pop things.
I have purchased hundreds of them. And I stopped years ago because I realized I've made a lot of financial mistakes in my life. that was one of them. Hey, Pokemon, fucking Maple Story, League of Legends, all that shit. I've made a lot of financial decisions like that were not good in my life. But
sure.
I'm curious about this. When you were younger, did anything as far as like comics or whatever inspire you to work out? Because for me, it was Dragon Ball Z that really got me like working in the gym really hard because I really wanted to look like Goku. I have a picture of Goku in my office, and I have another picture of Black Panther. Actually, my phone name is Black Panther. Oh. So did any of that inspire you to get active when you were younger?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you look at any of the old, really any old or new, the drawings of the way they portray, just from as an anatomist, if you look at those pictures, those images, you're like, this is great. Cause what's more motivating than wanting to look this way? Yeah. They all look the same. Uh-huh. They're all built to be perfect specimens.
Extremely muscular.
And
athletic as shit.
It's not really a new concept. There are gyms that I've seen. They've got murals on their walls. Mm-hmm. They've got all kinds of incredible, which we just did a mural on our garage door. That's the other thing, is it's not just the painting of the miniatures. Our shirts, I've helped design those, the mm-hmm. murals on the wall. A lot of the whole gym is kind of artistic expression at this point, yeah. Which again, I love. But oh yeah, I know exactly what those are. My roommate had 500 of those at one point in his room. I know some of them were worth a heck of a lot of money, but yeah.
Most of them aren't.
Yeah.
It's a waste of money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was terrible. He would buy like new Beanie Babies. I'm like, dude, you're just throwing your money away for no reason. But the superhero thing definitely inspired me as a kid to kind of get involved in this early on. Uh-huh. Even
who's your favorite?
Ooh,
favorite superhero.
We were just talking about this. As a kid, it was always Spider-Man. That's an easy one, mm-hmm. low-hanging fruit, everybody. I think now it might be Doctor Strange.
Ooh. Oh, he's...
I'm liking what they're doing with his character a lot.
Yeah.
And that's one of the rare... Oh, there you go.
That was really good.
Oh, that one's really good.
That one's big.
How long have you been doing the model thing? Did you start with other stuff like Gundams or something, or did you just start doing models recently?
No, literally, I started with the tiny ones, mm-hmm. the little tiny Warhammer ones, where you're painting. I mean, the detail on these things, they're this big, and you're painting the face and the eyes and the tones and everything, and then went to that. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I started up again was because, like I said, I figured out a way to kind of convert it into both content and creation for the gym. There you go. That's the mural. The mural on the door is so cool.
Did you do that?
I helped kind of create the scape of it. Like mm-hmm. I said, okay, here's who I want. Here are the images I want to use. I put it all together. I started some of it, but then I brought in a mural mm-hmm. artist to kind of finish it for me just because it took so long. It's just so much time.
I got a little bit of a problem with superheroes.
Tell me.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
Well... it's not like in our society, it's not admirable to have something handed to you, right? And a lot of these superheroes had stuff handed to them. Like, it's not like they train for it.
Okay.
It's not like they're working out for it. It's not like they dieted a particular way. Mm-hmm. They just have it. And especially Superman.
Not Goku, but anyway.
I know. I do know that there's some stories where they got some of the people will train and do certain things. But Superman is a real piece of shit.
He is.
He is. He's probably, that motherfucker is probably below average where he's from. He's a fucking alien. I'm tired of it, man. I can't take it anymore. Flying around in your fucking cape and shit. Everyone in your hometown fucking flies around in the goddamn cape.
He comes down and he's a fucking god to everybody.
I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
Born into it, didn't have to earn a thing. No, you know what? That is a very
motherfuckers are privileged.
You're kind of blowing my mind with this right now. Because you got to think of, you got to really think of ones that did have to work for it. Like Spider-Man,
he's picked on. He never had to work through anything.
And he got bit by the spider and just got it. He didn't do mm-hmm. anything for it.
And then he gets revenge on people. And you're like, that's not cool.
Well, let's see.
If you
this.
Worked for it's
gotta
it, that
be,
would be
it's
cool.
It's got to be Batman. It's got to be one of the only ones that I can think of.
Batman's a billionaire.
I was going to say the one born trains, with the right?
He did train.
Yeah, that didn't give him his ability to Okay. I mean, it gave him his ability to make some incredible toys, but it didn't give him his ability to
climb ropes and stuff.
Yeah, fight.
He still had to do CrossFit, train. Probably. Yeah.
He's very intelligent. But what were you saying, Andrew?
No, to say that Batman was, born with a silver spoon in his mouth. So he had so many more opportunities than all of us.
True. But he's a fucking genius. Like, when we think about it, he's a super
is
cool
he,
detective.
Though?
Yes, he is.
Or does he had
a way to delete the Justice League.
Do he all had a rich people's plan. Kids make it? Do all rich people's kids make it?
Nah,
up,
bro.
Right? No. They end up pretty fucked up.
And he didn't even have parents. He had Alfred.
He had
that's true. He had that going against him.
Right?
That's Alfred true. Might be a secret weapon.
Alfred is a secret weapon.
He is. You know anything about Alfred?
Still some discipline.
Oh, Alfred, the character of Alfred. He was like a surgeon in the army. He's like a weapon specialist. He knows how to make explosives. Oh, Alfred's a real understated character in Batman. Alfred, see, I knew this was going to go this way. We're just going to talk about superheroes. I know it. He's a great character. Alfred's badass. And Alfred, in a lot of the comics, trained Batman. A lot of people think it's the League of Shadows.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but Alfred trained him quite a bit in some of the comics.
And what about Bane? Like, how is Bane? Bane's like 4,000 pounds or something, right?
Oh, Bane. Movie or comic? Because he's in the movie. He he's part of the league, and they gave Tom Hardy a big old role and everything. But in the comic, he's just a murderer who got serum. Again, didn't work for it. You're kind of changing my perspective
because
I'm thinking more and more. All of them, none of them earned it. All of them got it from something that was completely not like they didn't earn it. All of them, like chemicals.
What a bunch of pussies.
They got it from,
That's why I like Captain America, because he was just like everyone else, but he had way, way more courage, way more brave, way better than everyone. Just tiny, skinny, scrawny, just like me. Got on some gear.
He went on some sauce, right?
And then it made him the best version of himself.
Mm.
So, yes, he did get it given to
he's
him.
He's on performance enhancing drugs.
He's on him big time. Yes.
These are... it is sending the wrong message, though, isn't it? It's like literally telling everybody, you need to get something externally in order to be this way. Like, you need magic in your life somehow. And there's only a few ways you can get that on Earth. This isn't a comic book. There's only a few places you can really get that. Yeah.
I don't know. There is something cool about being the chosen one in some way, like Harry Potter or something like that. Like, there's some cool things to, like, I guess somebody just being born a certain way or having a particular, like, lineage. But, it gets to be weird when you really start to think about it.
That's why everybody likes – well, all kids that are millennials look at Dragon Ball Z as the quintessential training gym shit. Mm. Because Goku, he's a Saiyan. Yeah, he's from another planet. But at the end of the day, that motherfucker had to train. He got his ass beat. He got stronger because he got his ass beat. Beat the boss. Gets his ass beat again. Gets stronger because he gets his ass beat. Boom. It's just like training. Go in the gym. Get hurt.
Yep.
Recover. Get stronger. Goku is a bro.
And he actually like lifts, right?
He lifts. He actually lifts.
Uh-huh. And he takes,
does
like,
martial arts.
Some supplement or something, right?
A senzu bean. A senzu bean. Let's
still
say you're fucked
natty.
Up.
Yeah, yeah.
No. All it does is, let's say you get fucked up, you take a senzu bean.
He got banned recently by WADA.
You recover, and you're good to go. That's all a senzu bean is. But we got to rewind back to Batman, because that movie came out and you had some opinions.
I did, yeah.
It was good, in my opinion, but you know more about Batman.
And this will be out after a little while, because we have a couple of episodes from the Arnold coming out. So
good, so it won't be spoiling anything.
So I think at this point,
if
you wanted to see it and you're going to be upset by spoilers, you would have seen it already.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it...
he's not in the future yet.
If you haven't seen it, just skip over this part and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
We got chapters.
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot about it I liked and some stuff that I didn't. I think the casting was really well. I love the Penguin. I mean, you will watch that movie. You will never know it's Colin Farrell. You'll never.
That was Colin Farrell?
Yeah, bro.
Holy shit.
See what I'm talking about? Nobody knows it's Colin
Farrell.
That's
insane.
Oh, he's got like three chins and a scar on his face. And he does good. He did real good as the Penguin. Oh, they call him Oz. It's a great character. He was probably my favorite. If I had to pick one thing out of that movie, probably the Penguin.
I'm blown away.
Yeah,
I'm
me too.
Away. That was amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know until I got to it. Yeah, dude, look at him. You have no idea that's him. Not a clue.
He's such a good actor. Like, he did an amazing part, like, in that role. That was fucking dope.
He's kind of reinvented himself.
Wow.
Because, for most of his career, I think he kind of was like a B or C list actor. He never really made it into the big films, but he's a good actor. He's done great.
Yeah.
But no, I liked that. I did not particularly like the way they looked at Batman. I was not a big fan of... to me, Batman was always the character who kind of looked at the city and said, or looked at his environment and said, you know, this isn't right. Y'all can't get it right. So I'm doing it my way and I'm going to fix it. And mm-hmm. here are the reasons why.
Yeah.
You know, crime is out of control. Corruption is widespread. This is what I'm taking. I'm doing this now. It seemed like he kind of regressed on that in this film. He seemed a little bit almost guilty for doing the things that he was doing. He seemed like he, because he has that big I'm vengeance thing that he says in the beginning, which is dope. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, he kind of goes back on that. He, I think I put it to you, it seemed like they wanted him to be kind of like Habitat for Humanity. That's what they wanted Batman to be. They kind of changed the way Batman looked. And and I'm kind of beholden to the Chris Nolan Batman. That's my favorite Batman so far. Mm-hmm. That or Michael Keaton, one of the two. I like them both. I think they're both great Batmans. That is probably the biggest overarching problem I had with it. I also kind of...
What about like him being very emo looking?
That who said Andrew said
yeah,
that.
Sorry,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. And you know what? He doesn't turn it off. That's another thing I didn't mention that I noticed. He is that way the whole time.
He's angsty.
As Batman and as Bruce Wayne. You know how in the other ones it's like, okay.
Bruce Wayne's like,
all right, you know, I'm gonna one arm it with two girls at the same time, go in and buy the bar, and then I'm gonna leave, and this is me.
Yeah.
He doesn't do any of that. He just looks mad and sad and angry the whole time. He looks like that.
He even has bad posture. Like at least Bruce Wayne and Christopher Nolan was walking around like this. Robert Pattinson, I mean, it's cool that he chose not to hop on the sauce, but Robert Pattinson looks like rock around bad posture.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. Just pick up your shoulders.
Clean it up.
It's not even that he, you know, I get it. Not everybody's going to do the Ben Affleck thing and get 230 and just get on stage and look ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he didn't even do anything. It's almost like he did it on purpose. He's like, not only am I not going to get on, you know, any steroids, I'm also not going to work out. I'm not going to do it.
Mark, when you see this movie, you're going to be funny. You remember that scene where Robert Pattinson is shirtless?
Yeah.
Okay. You remember when he's pushing the table and he does this weird spread? So the directors are probably like, try to look bigger here. So he goes like this and pushes the table in a weird way so his back looks wide.
And it's unimpressive.
And but they did do good at like giving him some angles where like it looked like he was kind of big.
You could tell
top.
That they tried.
They did.
They tried.
But the moving the table with the shirt off and the back thing, that was just.
And he's like, as he does, I'm like, okay, that's not Batman. That's not Batman.
But I think it was a good movie. I like it more than he
Why
does.
Is Batman moving furniture?
We can't say that. We don't want to spoil it too much.
Doesn't he have people to do that for him?
That's true.
There were things about it I liked. Overall, I did like the movie. I had some critiques, but yeah, again.
He does look good there.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Right? He does look good there.
That's a generous look. And
I was almost thinking there was a little bit of CGI involved in that.
Definitely.
Does he look good there?
I mean, he's not ripped, but he has
does
muscle.
He look
looks
like,
healthy, but doesn't look like a superhero.
I was going to say, does he look like Batman?
I'm pretty sure they knew this movie was coming for a year, a minimum. It's like, hey, in 2022, you're going to be Batman. What are you going to do?
I'm not going to do steroids.
I think it's badass.
I'm not going to get a haircut, that's for sure.
I think it's badass that he was just like, nah, I'm not going to work out and y'all are going to deal with that shit. And he did it. It's kind of cool. And the fact that it's still a good movie, like
he's never getting another role like that.
As somebody who looks at the suit, I feel like the aesthetics of the superhero are just as important as the, like, he's got to look a certain way. This is what we're doing. This is why we like him. The comic books, he's got to look a certain way.
You have a point, because if he's walking around and he doesn't have superpowers and he's punching people and kicking people, you'd expect him to be able to have a bit of a build to him.
Especially Batman.
Yeah.
Batman's whole thing is that he will outpunch. He's not Captain America. He doesn't have performance enhancers on it. His whole thing is he's out-trained everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love Batman. Batman's whole thing is I'm going to go out every single night. I'm going to combine all the martial arts I've learned and all the strength training I do in the Batcave, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to kick the shit out of everybody in this city and do that every single night.
That's true.
Are you one of these guys that's like too much of a purist? Like when you see one of these movies, and you're pretty animated. So are you in the movie theater yelling at the screen?
Oh, man, I can be.
That's not real.
Sometimes.
That's not normally like that.
In this one, I got a little, I will say this, and I'm trying not to give all of it away.
Right.
There was...
Oh, here's the original Batman.
So, look at that.
So I'm not going to show it on screen or play it because last time we did, we got dinged for it. But
yeah. Did you?
Yeah, yeah. But it's the Batman scene.
Like Robert West or something?
Oh my gosh, look at that. Why have I never seen this?
Oh my God, dude.
Look at the shape he's in.
Dude, he's beating the shit out of that shark and you could hear it like thunk, thunk.
An uppercut to the rib.
This is
of the shark.
When is this the 60s? Is this the 50s? When was this?
Yeah, this is a 60s, 70s.
But then he calls for like a certain spray, and they just happen to have this array of oceanic repellents.
Back spray.
And shark.
And they happen to have shark spray. So
look at Robin.
You got to be prepared for all situations. Everything.
But did you watch the Lego Batman movie?
Oh my goodness, that was amazing.
The most amazing nap I've ever had. But in that movie, they reference shark spray.
You didn't like it?
No, it's not. I don't know.
Andrew sleeps during good movies.
I might have liked it.
Yeah, he's frustrating.
Dude, it's cold. It's dark. The seat reclines. Nobody's going to bother me
for about an hour. Oh, you saw it in theaters? I didn't see it. I saw it in my house. But I loved it. Oh, I love the Lego. Yeah. Oh, I think Will Arnett has the best, his voice. Darkness!
when Superman's like, I can see you're laughing in there, whatever. That was pretty good.
No, I like that one. And I didn't hate this one. Yeah, there's just a couple things about it. The coolest part I thought was the car chase. The Batmobile in this one was fire.
But check that out.
So
look,
cool.
He sprayed him with the spray and then he explodes.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I sidetracked you.
That's so
cool. Are you yelling at the screen in the movie theater?
I was during the car chase. That's kind of how I was going to round that back to the answer. Yeah, during the Penguin car chase, when Penguin's going and he's after him, I was yelling. And I had a date with me, and it was the first date, and she was like, please calm down. Shit.
That was the first date?
It was the first date.
Let's go.
Right. Now, I think with movies like that, like it's, you know, those are movies where you can do that kind of stuff, especially if you're going to the movie theater, as soon as the movie comes out.
Yeah.
Like you expect that, like people are going to be hyped.
The rest of the freaks.
And it was a 3-hour movie. So I feel like me doing that kind of woke up the theater. Nice. Like the theater was a little quiet. And they were like, let's go people. This is Batman. I know we're on 2 hours and 20 minutes, but let's go.
Yeah. I'm sad to admit when I did go and see that
movie. I'm so proud of you.
No, I have to admit this to Andrew. I slept like, let's just say 30 minutes in, I was like trying to stay awake with my girl and I fell asleep for like 15 minutes and I woke back up. I was like, fuck, I hope I didn't miss too much. I'm going to rewatch it. But
well, you need to just tell the people to take this because I'll be honest, I've never been so hyper focused in my whole life.
Right. It's good shit.
Take that. Go to the Batman movie. It was too long. So it didn't need to make it that long.
Better villain, Heath Ledger, Joker, or the new Penguin?
No, that's not even close. Heath Ledger.
Okay, just making sure, because I haven't seen the new one. And I love that trilogy right there is probably my favorite superhero trilogy. And I'm a huge Captain America fan.
Me too.
But that Batman trilogy is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, me too. Okay. I think, I just don't know how anybody's going to...
No.
I held out hopes for Jared Leto after I saw the Snyder Cut. I thought, okay, well, maybe. That's a good one, by the way. That's what I liked. Mm-hmm. I love the Snyder Cut on the Justice League.
Did you see that?
That was good.
No, I don't think so.
It was a lot darker and stuff.
And so that was 3 hours long. But I didn't feel like it. I was glued to it. I'm like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. So you can do that. You just have to be able to really bring... You have to be able to bring it.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson was fun.
Oh,
he was great.
Right?
As one of my... That's probably... Well, not probably. That's definitely my second favorite Joker. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Jack Nicholson.
Colors and everything. Like, he just...
I was so young. Yeah. I don't remember that.
What about our boy John Cena in Peacemaker? Have you checked that out yet?
You know what? We have a Peacemaker shirt. And no, I have not seen the show.
Oh, wow. I think that you would love it.
I love the Suicide Squad. Yeah, I thought that was hysterical.
I think that you'll absolutely... It's so over the top.
Yeah, of course. It's everything he does. He's got a gun. It's this long.
Yeah, it's incredible. We love it. And Seema's been watching it too, right?
And it has some, themes. It has some pretty deep themes for the show. Yeah, yeah. It's really good. I'm happy that they renewed it for a season 2, but John Cena did a fucking good job as Peacemaker.
He is. Yeah. He's low-key very funny.
Absolutely.
He's hilarious. Hysterical.
Yeah. I used to have seen a lot of John Cena movies, and that dude can fucking act.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. He's amazing.
When I think act, I don't, I mean, I know he's funny. I know he's good. I know he's big. I'm trying, when is he, like, what's a acting role where he really acted.
I think in this, you see like a lot of diversity from him.
A little bit of range.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of range, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not just the same thing.
And then what Mark mentions, he's just because he knows him so well, he's just like, I'm pretty sure that wasn't in the script because that's just all John Cena. That's just the way he is.
Yeah.
You know, like showing him naked.
Fucks around a lot.
Like naked all the time. And
Suicide Squad when he's in his underwear.
He doesn't like clothes, that's for sure.
Well, who would like clothes when he fucking look like that?
Yeah,
that's
great.
Like,
that's incredible.
There's some pretty incredible specimens at this table, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody look like John Cena. It's really at his age. What's he weigh? I mean, at his age.
He's probably about 45, and then he probably weighs 240, 250.
Yeah.
240?
He's at 240. Yeah,
240, 250, something like that.
He's also not short.
How tall is he? He's about your height.
Oh, damn.
You guys would look very similar. He just has like overly massive arms.
His joints. Like
his
Mark
fucking
is,
arms and like wrists and stuff. It's weird.
His hands. His hands? He's when, like a...
Yeah, yeah.
Mitts.
Like that's like a thing on the internet. People always talk about his hands, but he had the band that he wears on his arms is for your head. It's a headband. And he just wears it on his arms.
That's the best thing I've ever heard about
him. Yeah, right?
Wears a headband on his arms.
Yo. You know what he loves? He loves to train. Loves to train. Yeah.
I've seen his workout videos. It's inspiring.
Trains all the time.
I love that. I love OG, you know, guys who have done it for 40, 50 years, and that's what I want. And that's, you know, that's kind of the way that I train myself, my clients. That's kind of my whole methodology is I want to push for longevity. That's my biggest, if I had one word for, you know, the way I like to create programming, it's for longevity. I want to be doing this when I'm 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old.
How old are you now?
I'm 31.
31.
As of last week, yeah. Okay.
I like what you're saying about that because some people, when they talk about longevity, they just talk about like wanting to live to be like 126 or like try to break some record and be 150 years old or whatever, which kind of sounds a little miserable because everybody that you know would die.
Oh, yeah. So plus your quality of life. I mean, that's got to be about that. It can't be about the number.
And that's what it seemed like you were touching upon right there is that it's about the quality of life. Like you want to be in a squat rack when you're 70 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be doing what I do now the same way I do when I'm training at that age. And that's something that if you... And, you know, seamless shout out to Ian Danny. I mean, if you're trained a certain way at a young age and you're taught the right way right out of the gate and you never make all those crazy mistakes, you kind of have a leg up on that. And that's something that I am just every day so thankful for is that I just have, you know, I don't have any real past injuries, something that wails on me, Whoa. Something that nags me. And I'm able to train 6-7 days a week, you know, and that is in largely because I have a, you know, pretty good understanding of how to train safely.
And you have a movement background. Let's not forget that because you just mentioned
gymnastics.
Training.
Yeah,
training when young, but you have a gymnastics background. So how do you think that's training to your adulthood? Because as we were talking about in the gym, like I'm starting to do a lot of calisthenics works. I'm trying to train myself into a handstand and handstand walks.
Heck yeah.
And it's harder as an adult. But when I see kids who did gymnastics, even if they stopped and they get a little bit out of shape and they're not doing a lot of shit, those kids can hop into a handstand. They can bang out pull-ups. They can bang out dips like no one's business.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you are in your very early stages of development, you've heard them say that kids are rubber for your brain and your body. You're learning your body's capabilities, both mentally and physically, at that early, early age. If you take somebody who's 10 and you put them in a gym and you get them with an instructor and say, okay, hey, you know, we're not going to do weights. We're not going to do any of that, but we're going to work on hip mobility, we're going to work on getting you into the splits, we're going to work on the rings, we're going to do the bars, the pommel horse, we're going to do flexibility, strength, endurance, all of that kind of stuff, and we're going to do that. I was training gymnastics 5 days a week. If you do that as a young child, you will never forget that. And I told you guys, you know, even now, I mean, I haven't done gymnastics in over 20 years, but I can still do a handstand, I can still do a handspring, I can still do a flip. Those things are stuck with you. And as a foundation, I've never seen anything that provides a better foundation for kids and for development. And that's, I will say, there is certainly a sort of a caveat that should be mentioned with that. And that is that you shouldn't really stick with that world for too long. Some of these, I touched on this when we were in there. Some of these coaches, these gymnast coaches, they're like, oh, well, we got to get you to the Olympics. Got to go to the Olympics. I'm like, well, you know, I kind of think I want to do school. Like,
is
that
the only goal for gymnastics, by the way? Is it just the Olympics? Because I can't think of anything else. Like,
if you want to go, and why? Why would you want to do this? But if you wanted to go professionally, that's really it. There is no other way. That's it. That's the end road. is to get to the Olympics. In order to do that, you have to sacrifice. First of all, it's not, I wouldn't say it's healthy. It's probably unhealthy at that point to reach that scale, to go that long and that hard and all of that, that impact. I mean, because it is a taxing, taxing sport the higher you go. And I did it for like 8 years. That's probably about how long I'd recommend anybody do it. You probably don't need to keep doing it after that. I mean, if you start when you're like eight, like I did, and you go till you're 15 or 16, you're probably right now, I mean, you're about to go to high school, you're doing all these other things, you probably can stop and get into sports. But as that early age and as a kid, I mean, if you have young ones, that's a great environment to get them in. It's a classroom setting, you get, you know, early, you know, interaction with other kids, you get to do something physical. It's not crazy, you know, demanding on your body as a young kid. It's just once you get older and you start, I mean, I kind of developed a little bit early and I remember like being weirdly the tallest one in the class and I'm not tall, but all these kids who stay with it for so long, a lot of gymnasts are very small. The good ones, the ones that go the furthest are typically smaller framed people.
How is it for the females? Is it a little different? Cause I know some females that have done, done gymnastics and, a lot of them have a lot of injuries from that. Is it different or does it just depend on your coach or what have you seen?
Well,
like, as you said, you didn't have really nagging injuries, which is kind of surprising because gymnastics is very, is like very violent on your body.
It is. And again, I did it from the ages of 8 to 15 or 16. So those are very early ages. And I was fortunate enough to have a good coach. I don't really know is the honest answer because I haven't really studied gymnastics. It'd be a very interesting meta-analysis to do if you were to take, you know, youth male and female athletes, really look at, okay, you know, what age demographic gets the most injuries? What are they from? How do they, you know, improve? That'd be really cool. That'd be a cool research analysis. But I don't know whether females or males have difference, but I do know that the longer you do gymnastics, it's pretty inevitable that you will get hurt. And I'm sure I did have injuries while doing it.
What were your best events? They all seem like impossible to me, by the way. What were your best events?
Probably the rings. Honestly, I love the rings. That was my favorite. And I remember it's so funny because when you do the rings now in CrossFit, you've got the muscle up, which is so popular. Everybody's like, a muscle up. I'm like, what, like just getting up like before a kip? Like,
that's the starting position.
That's the starting position. Yeah. That's not even an exercise. That's like, hello to the judge. Now I get up and go.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden that's an exercise. But I remember I went into a CrossFit gym and I remember all these guys were just like dying. They couldn't do it. I'm like, what are y'all trying to do? They're like, a muscle up. I'm like, what's a muscle up? And they're like, just getting up under the ring. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, just like this. And then they're like, what the, you know, I mean, gymnastics. Gymnastics teaches you how to do that.
Yeah.
But
that's such a good skill. Like, the cool thing I think is like, and Andrew, I hope Aurelius does gymnastics. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's so cool because like, if you do gymnastics and then you take that into any other sport, just the body awareness that you have, I think would allow you to kind of excel at any movement-based type of endeavor. Because when it comes to anything, like, you need to have a level of body control. I find it wild that we can deadlift a crazy amount of weight, bench a crazy amount of weight, squat a crazy amount of weight, and we can't do 5 pull-ups. At least as like when it comes to like real powerlifting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can understand a lot of those athletes are 200, 300 something pounds, and it's not the focus, but just on a survival type thing, if you can't lift your weight up onto a bar, if you can't push your, like, if you have no control over just your body, because that's all you have as you get older, that's a gap. That's a problem. And gymnastics will give you that as when you're young, and you have that for the rest of your life for the most part.
Absolutely. It's what I like to think of as kind of an imbalanced athlete. And imbalanced athletes can go a long way if their imbalance fits whatever event they're trying to do, like a power lifter. But for me, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm a powerlifting coach. I'm not. But what I like to do is I like to incorporate power lifts and functional movement patterns and endurance, you know, all of that stuff into the same type of modality and get all of that combined to get a very well-rounded, structured human being. I love on it, the total human optimization. I think that sentence is perfect. I think when I think of like, what's my goal? Like, what do I want to do with this person? If they come to me and they ask me, hey, you know, what are we going to do? In my head, I'm thinking that. I'm like, okay, we're going to make something that's going to touch on all these different aspects and we're going to get you from here to there, but we're going to do it, you know, slowly and gradually touching all of these areas. And we're not just going to focus on one. So oftentimes you'll get an athlete, it's fine, but they'll want one thing. They want, hey, it's the worst when it's, I want bigger arms or I want bigger this. That's oftentimes like immediately I kind of try to correct that thought process. But if it's, I want a bigger deadlift, well, then in that case, okay, you know, we're dealing with most likely an imbalanced athlete, at least in their mentality. They want to build this. They've probably neglected this.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll address it. Maybe we won't. But in my head, that's how I think.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean for some of your clients, for them to be optimized? Obviously, it depends on their goals a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what are you hoping that they get from it? What are you hoping that their body's able to do and express?
Yeah, it all depends on the athlete. I'll use an example. I have a client of mine, Jessica. She's incredible. And anybody who watches our stories, I've had people reach out and say, like, you know, that is the craziest client I've ever seen you do. She was somebody who came in. She was probably like 97 pounds. She was just very, very small. Very,
how tall
very
is she?
Frail. 5'6", 5'7".
Whoa!
Very small.
Okay.
Very, very small.
Yeah.
Middle-aged, small human being, just very small proportion, but needed strength training so badly. To say she was immobile was to just understate the whole situation.
She wasn't mobile either?
She was immobile, couldn't move all that well. She just wasn't strong enough. She did not have the muscle strength to perform basic. Like if you asked her to run, it would be almost impossible for her to do that.
Mm.
So for me, when I thought of, you know, okay, what is her human optimization? What do I need to do with this person? Well, I need to start and treat this like this is a day one foundational, you know, 12-year-old kid who's trying to just learn how to do the basics and get to the starting line. Just getting her to the starting line to perform certain lifts took months. And we've been together for years now. It's incredible. But seeing her go from, you know, not being able to barely walk and step up the step to get into my gym to now she's doing, you know, title tank, single leg step ups, and she's doing lunges, and she's doing, she's doing power cleans with the Fit Fighter, like all those kind of multi. That to me is, you know, someone like that who needed muscle strength, needed the, yeah, that's her.
Wow. How old is she?
You know what?
She looks like she got younger.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of funny.
You ask her, she'd say she did.
Yeah.
No, she did amazing. She is by far one of the most incredible stories I've ever seen. And that's an old one. She's had a couple more since then. Because I just went back and looked through all the, just some of the old, like, transactional, because we're doing taxes, mm-hmm. and seeing how long she's been here, a couple years now. It's incredible what she's done and how she's been able to change. But someone like that would have a totally different viewpoint in my head. I'm like, all right, I'm not trying to get this person, really not even trying to get her to deadlift at all. I'm just trying to get her to the point where she's comfortable. Perfect example. She sent me a video of her lifting the Brita water jug and putting it into the filter. And she texted me and I'm like, what is this? And she goes, she texted me. She's like, I want you to know how important this is to me. Mm. I've never been able to do this.
Yeah. Right.
I've never been able to lift this and put this in here.
Yeah. Things like that. Putting your suitcase, your luggage in the overhead bin, just these tasks that maybe some of the rest of us might take for granted because training is like a huge part of our life. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other folks that just, they maybe haven't explored some of that and they haven't tried. And a lot of people are in a lot of pain too. How do you manage people's pain? What are some things that you do when, you know, someone comes to you and it sounds like this girl was just struggling with her strength, but what do you do when someone's having like some real issues with their pain?
Yeah. Really and truly, the best thing that I have found for pain management has been contrast therapy. It this varies, of course, you know, disclaimer that of course I'm not a medical doctor, but when someone comes to me and they have some kind of a pre-existing nagging injury or something where they've had, you know, surgery or something that isn't shutting up, it's not leaving them alone. A lot of times I find that while there may be some kind of a anatomical issue that needs to be worked out manually through whatever, deep tissue workout, you know, strengthen around the area, anything like that. If it's residing inflammation or something along those lines, contrast therapy has changed. It's changed my life and it has changed the lives of so many of my clients. And I want to dive deeper into this, but a bit about how we train at my facility. And this is what I'm getting in a PhD. I'm starting that off here in the next, pretty excited, in June.
Sick.
Yeah. What my thesis is on is the combination of strength training and contrast therapy inside of a 30-minute metabolic window. So what our facility does, it's very cool. We have the training, which is essentially phase one of every session with us. Everything is one-on-one or two-on-one. We do, you know, partner training. They do the strength training with me. with the program that we design. I have a mobile app we use for peer-to-peer sharing. They do that. Then they go into the back. And in the back, and Andrew, if you can mm-hmm. find something like this, this would be incredible. We have our ice sub and our sauna. And what I have learned, I got into this a lot because I had a client that had, he was misdiagnosed with ALS. Yeah. He had nerve damage going up his legs. He had restless leg syndrome. He couldn't sleep. Uh-huh. And as a family member. So it was very personal for me. So I essentially started looking into the design process of these tubs.
What does that say, by the way?
Frost-Rite chamber. Frost-Rite chamber. Cool. So it's a self-sustaining ice tub. It filters itself and it makes its own ice. We run an ozone filter and it basically chills cool. like a freezer. Yeah. And so what we've done, and we're in the process of actually, we're going to eventually make and manufacture these. So we're pretty excited. We'll get one out to you guys for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah. We're some very cutting edge stuff from some investors that aren't me that are going to make a very, very cool model. But everybody does strength training. Then they go back and they do contrast therapy. And our sauna is outstanding. Gets to 220 degrees.
What sauna is this?
We made it.
So you guys made the sauna?
We made this stuff in-house. This is not these. Wow. Yeah, we worked with. I have an incredible engineer. I have I've got great people around me, and that's a big key to doing this kind of thing. But our sauna we made.
Wow.
So it's a it's a great little unit. It's not an infrared. If I could do my thesis,
you would rather have an infrared?
I don't want an infrared. I don't get it. Don't get it. Everybody around me, you're like, yeah, but it's cooking you from within. I'm like, okay, maybe it works. Yeah. Maybe it does. And I'm sure it does. But when I sit in an infrared and I get in there, it's like, okay, 20, 30 minutes. Okay, I think I'm sweating.
Yeah.
Like, you do not have that problem. You get into that unit. Am I crazy? Like,
I know what you mean. Yeah, because the heat is super dry. And you're talking about the type of sauna where you put the rocks on it and stuff like
those
that.
Those are better. I like the way those feel better. I get to use an infrared sauna at this place in Sacramento called Asha. Theirs goes up to 195. So I do sweat. Yeah. But I've also been in a, like the sauna that you guys are talking about. And it's different.
A dry steam. That's what they call it. With the stones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got a bowl, you do the water, and it steams, and it's hot. Yeah. And that's the thing, is it's like really hot. And mm-hmm. what's amazing is, I don't know if y'all have ever done contrast therapy. There's a place that's pretty popular. It's called Optimize, where they do, essentially what we are, is a private training facility with Optimize in our facility.
Nice.
So we have like essentially what they offer after each one of our strength training sessions. And what I have found, getting back to your earlier question, if you do strength training and you do contrast therapy closely together, and this is, to be determined research, because I want to do it. I'm going to do original research on this. What I have found is that, first off, the benefits for weight loss for individuals who that is their goal, doing this is the most efficient thing that I have ever found.
How so?
Again, the research has to be done. I have to now do it. But what I have found is that doing contrast therapy finishes off the workout and active, because when you get into the ice tub specifically, I mean, your metabolic rate, when your heart gets going, and you are, I am teaching you the breathing techniques. We are going through the meditational process. We are doing everything we can to keep your sympathetic nervous system down, which is hard enough coming off a HIIT workout, but you're getting into the ice and now you're in a place where, oh, your body is, you're overheating with the workout. You're chilling in the ice, and then you're heating again in the sauna. Doing that, and again, I need to do the research. I'm so excited to do it. But I have found my clients who have all, like, weight loss has been their thing. Since I started doing that, it's changed everything. And for injuries, the removal of inflammation, the toxins from the joints, the ligaments, the tendons, that would, the cold is powerful.
I can absolutely get behind you on that, because whenever I have little nagging things or whatever, I'll step into my cold plunge at home.
Yeah.
Literally, I'll do it for 1 minute or 2 minutes. I get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
30 minutes later, a few hours later, I'm warmed up. I just feel much better. Joints feel much better. It's wild.
How many times do people go back and forth?
So that's a very good question. I have found it varies based on the individual. Some people like 5-5-5. My personal favorite, I like 10 minutes cold, 10 minutes hot. I like straight up.
How cold is
10 minutes?
It's 34 to 37 degrees. That's what our water stays at. Now, that's my model, and my model's a little extreme. That's just me. I like it. I like the mental fortitude that you build by doing that as much as the physical. And yeah. We could talk about that for an hour, just the mental benefits of being able to enter that environment and overcome it. Mm-hmm. People with anxiety, depression, insomnia, I've had cops with PTSD who have done this with me, and I'm really? Like, hey, man, look, I have this idea in my head that I think this might help you. We need to try this out and just kind of do what I say and tell me if this helps you. They've sworn by it. The mental stuff on that is as powerful as the physical, in my opinion, from what I have found. But getting in that for 10 minutes means you have conquered the breathing, meditation, and the cold. You have overcome that. And what I will do is now I'm at a place I actually lead classes through TikTok on our live platform while I'm in there.
Yeah.
So I'll talk through like, all right, y'all, you know, the cold is not constant. It's going to come in waves. This is the first wave, about 3 minutes. And then I'm going to start to cool out, start to get numb. I'll feel all right. And then the second wave will hit me. And that is something that if you ever go 10 minutes and 10 minutes, what you want is what I like to call aftershock. See, after you do the cold, your body is going to naturally want to get back to your normal body temperature, and it's going to do that through vasodilation, pushing the blood back to your extremities after it left. It's painful. I've seen grown men cry. It can be an overwhelming process.
Painful in what way? Like your skin is, feeling weird, or is it like painful mentally more than anything else?
Very hard to describe.
Is it physical pain?
It's physical.
Okay.
It's also, it's weirdly emotional too.
Yeah.
And for me, I've done it enough to where it's like clockwork. It's fine. I don't get any stress or anxiety about it at all, because I understand the worst part of the whole ice bath is that 60 seconds before I get in, I'm thinking about it. My mind, I'm getting myself, kind of ready, and I'm getting myself kind of amped up. You just naturally, there's nothing you can do. Your heart's already elevated just looking at the water. But what I have found is that, I'm sorry, what was your question again? I lost my train of thought.
Oh, I was just saying what kind of pain?
Pain, physical or mental, yes. Physical is certainly the more of a, not so much your skin because you're kind of numb, but as that circulation starts to happen and it is a.
I understand. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. You feel very. First of all, you are convulsing, most likely. You've been in the cold for that long. You're shivering naturally.
Yeah.
Once you get out, the way I describe it, it's like getting into the cold again. Because your body, when you first get in, that first 3 minutes is by far the most difficult. Mm-hmm. I tell my clients, if you can make it past 3 minutes, you can get to 10 minutes, no problem. Mm. You're there.
I got to try that.
But if you go in and you do 10 minutes, then you get out. First minute or so out of the cold, you're fine. You're numb. You don't feel anything. As you start to recirculate and get your body back to normal temperature, you start to feel like that first 3 minutes all over again. Because your body doesn't quite get, am I cold? Am I hot? And then you add the sauna in there as well. Now, the sauna is actually kind of a Band-Aid. It's beneficial for me in our process because our clients, a turnaround time for our sessions is about 70 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not, that's a decent amount of time. You got phase one training and then contrast therapy, which is about 25 minutes if they do 10 and 10. The sauna is there to kind of get you, because most people wouldn't be able to operate their car. If you got into that ice bath for 10 minutes and you just got out and tried to leave, you would probably crash your car. Like, it's probably not safe.
Shaking.
Oh, I've had to do it one time. One time I forgot to turn the sauna on and then I had to go. And I was like in my car just like, but the sauna helps kind of reset you. You won't even sweat. 220 degrees after the ice bath, you will not sweat. You'll get in there, you'll feel right, and you'll leave.
Power Project family, how's it going? I hope you guys are enjoying the episode. And I want to tell you, sometimes when you're a lifter, you need certain pieces of equipment that's going to help you perform a little better in the gym. Just like the hip circle is going to help warm up your hips, knee sleeves are going to keep your knees warm when you're squatting. The slingshot's going to help you bench a little bit more. But the cool thing is that Mark made all of this equipment when he was in the middle of his powerlifting career because he wanted equipment that could help him perform better, as it can also help you perform better. The cool thing is that all this equipment was made for lifters by lifters. Andrew, can you tell them how to get it?
Yes, that's over at markbellslingshot.com. And at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT10 to save 10% off your entire order. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
I've done that before. This place has a cold and hot, but I was curious. Number one, do you have these people take electrolytes? Because obviously they're sweating a lot while they're in the sauna. But secondly, have you ever had the sensation of like airheadedness or lightheadedness when you're doing contrast therapy. What happens sometimes is I'll go into the sauna for whatever. I'll get out, I'll go to the cold plunge. And when I get out of there, it's almost like I want to faint. Like literally, I feel like, I just may pass out. Not because of like, I've sweated or anything, but I just feel like a lot of like airiness in my head.
Oh yeah.
I'm good, but it feels unsafe.
When you feel this, is it immediately when you get in, or is it when do you feel this sensation?
It's random sometimes. So I'll do the sauna, I'll get out, I'll go into the cold plunge.
You're starting with the sauna.
Yeah, no, sometimes I start with the cold plunge and sauna, but like I remember the last time when I did the sauna, came out, and then I went to the cold plunge, three or four minutes while I was in the cold plunge, I was looking at my heart rate, it was really low, and I was just like, stay here, Nsiba, stay here, stay aware, right? And I was like, this is weird.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly what you're talking about.
Do you know what the fuck's happening?
I honestly don't. I honestly don't. And you know why? I did it a couple times. I used to go cold, hot, and I did what you did, where I would go in the sauna, you'll get myself, because your heart is so, so low, beating so slowly because you're meditating in the sauna, you're so hot, you're overheated. Then you get out, then you get into the ice, and you don't even really feel it. You get in and you just like... I remember one time I did it at night, and my tub is outside, so I'm looking up. The stars were going, like rolling. I'm like, okay, I'm fine, but I'm not about to let my clients do this in the back, while I'm working with the next person. No way. Yeah. So I don't do hot to cold. I only let my clients do cold to hot.
Okay.
Because of that exact reason. You're right. I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but something happens when you go hot to cold, as opposed to cold to hot.
Yeah, it's weird. Okay.
And, you know, I try to preface my cold, because that same exact thing can happen when you get into the cold initially. That shock factor hits you. So what I do is I teach my clients the breathing patterns. Is that a live? Oh, that's an old one. Man, look how short my hair is.
Sorry, I was just
going through. Look how short those shorts are. My gosh.
Hey, we love short shorts. Shorter.
Much shorter.
Yeah, I've seen y'all guys. You guys do the short shorts too. That's awesome. Yeah. But, oh boy.
I couldn't find anything where you were in the sauna, so I was trying to just find anything, but there we go.
That's a live, I think. Is that IG?
Yeah. But I think it might have been a live because it's longer than any of your other ones.
I'm imagining some of what's happening is like, you know, your blood pressure, your blood sugar. You know, some of these things are probably shifting around quite a bit. You just got done with exercise. So who knows? You know, a lot of times people say that your glycogen is kind of depleted after a training session, and maybe it's exacerbated when you go into a sauna and then go into the cold and things like that. But what I would imagine is happening in terms of body composition, you reporting that you've noticed some good changes with your clients. Mm-hmm. I would imagine it's just a further boost in the metabolism, in burning calories, because we know that when you go into a sauna that your heart rate does increase a bit. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, it's very obvious that when you go into cold, your heart rate's going to increase. So maybe it's just an opportunity for people to kind of almost absorb the stress of the workout in a more comfortable, cleaner way.
I like that.
If that makes sense, more efficiency. Like, people get all caught up with the calorie thing, and we've circled the wagon 9,000 times on is a calorie.
Yeah.
But what we found is that like there's certain calories that aren't used by the human body very efficiently for energy, like protein. So protein and fiber, they get to be a little bit of not necessarily completely free, I don't think, but they definitely have a different caloric value than what they're currently assigned of four calories per gram, or at least it kind of appears that way.
Right.
And so I think with something like what you're pointing out here is like maybe this somehow just makes the workout a little bit more efficient or assist with recovery, helps the body be a little bit more efficient with burning calories, you know, things of that nature. But I love when people like yourself are doing things like this and you're sharing the information, but not necessarily saying, hey, man, you're going to lose, you know, 8 pounds of fat in 6 weeks and you got this program and you're selling an ebook of hot and cold and all this kind of stuff. You're just saying, look, man, this is what I do with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that it's working really well. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not going to sit here and give you a bunch of science on what I think. But,
at least not yet.
I'm going to go test it and see what it looks like.
Oh, I love it. And I, you know, to your point on the calories, and Seema, what you mentioned as well with the electrolytes. Mm-hmm. I do have a supplement that I do give my in-person people. I don't rep supplements that much, but I have one where it's an amino acid and an electrolyte that they take after phase one, before phase two. So mm-hmm. they do take a real clean amino, just something quick, something absorbable that they just take right before doing the cold. Not everyone does, but a lot of them do. And that, I think, helps them mm-hmm. get through phase two as well. And I think it is just a nice capstone for the workout, because anybody who's done cold and hot therapy knows, I mean, better or worse, when you're done with it, you're going to have that euphoric feeling for the rest of the day. You're going to feel so good. And it's amazing to me the amount of, because this is somehow I wouldn't say a controversial topic, but there's a lot of information out there saying that it can interfere with hypertrophy training.
Oh, yeah.
That cold can. Mm-hmm. I tell people, look, I mean, again, like you said, I'm just repping what I know to be true for myself and my clients, just what I've seen. Mm-hmm. Is it good to do every single day? Probably not every single day, but a couple times a week, I have found it to be invaluable. And it feels amazing. You feel so, so good. I mean, how many times you leave the gym we leave the gym, we feel good all the time unless we got hurt. But most people, you know, they go to the gym, they do their thing, they leave. They're like, oh, I'm so tired. Whatever. You leave the gym after coming to us and you do the cold, the hot, and the workout all together. You've done, you know, everything's succeeded. Everything's tracked and you know that you got it all in. You feel great. Aside from the sense of accomplishment, you've got that just euphoric sense from that the cold and hot that just gets you going through the day. You've got an energy boost beyond anything. I mean, doing that, you couldn't go to sleep if you tried when you go mm-hmm. on that. That's what some people ask, could I pass out? I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Like, you go on that cold, you've never been that alert in your entire life. Like, you, and again, I can only rep what I've seen and what I've done and what my clients have said and all the testimonies from the people who I know. I'm not, of course, the only voice in this arena. Cold therapy is very mm-hmm. popular. It really is life-changing. Mm-hmm. And for us, it has shaped our business model and what we have been able to create. You know, we're already kind of a different, we do things to the tune of a different, you know, drum. Where, you know, the garage gym training empire is already kind of unique and weird, but now to combine that with something that is going to be, you know, peer-reviewed research, it's its own, you know, kind of training modality and uniqueness, and that's really what I want to show everyone how to do, and not just create a gym in your garage and do something with it, but to create kind of a method. Create a gym, create a and just kind of go with that. Mm-hmm. That's really what I see as sort of the future.
And then would you say that like so ice bath and then like a really hot shower contrasty enough, or does it have to be? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, our place, Optimize, those are probably like that's the peak. Like you get the best, coolest feeling from going to the cold water. I do recommend water. I will say that. I've done cryotherapy. You ever done cryotherapy?
I've done. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Not even close.
Water as a viscous material, it transmits temperature. Unlike, mm-hmm. I mean, it's an ancient but perennial substance on earth. It's a human experience. Getting into freezing cold water. Is amazing. Mm-hmm. There's something so primal about it. Literally. I mean, I'm sure you all have heard Wim Hof, seen his whole thing on the lizard brain. You know, all that's true. You are tapping into some very, very old, old methods by getting in that. We didn't invent shit. Like this is an old, old technique that people have used for recovery and for strength. I mean, getting uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. Again, getting back to the mental side of things, just pushing yourself to be in a situation where you're no longer an American in a 75 degree room all the time. You're in a very, very uncontrolled environment that you need to harness. Love that.
Have you found this attachment anywhere else? Like in training, like you do a lot of, I guess it's more conventional now, but a lot of unconventional training. Mm-hmm. People, you know, swinging shit, throwing shit.
Heck yeah.
Picking shit up off of the ground. Oh. Farmers carries, tire flips, like all these different movements. Have you seen that having a similar effect for some of the people that you work with? Because you're talking about the cold and hot kind of having almost like this primal kind of throwback. Oh, yeah. And it's quite obvious we're meant to and designed to utilize tools and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So when you have some of your clients utilizing these methods, what are you seeing?
Well, you know, men and women have been using off-balanced items for strength training for thousands of years. You know, you go back to I'm totally ripping on it here, but like the old Persian warriors mm-hmm. would use clubs and maces and steel for that kind of training. And what I find is that first and foremost, it's fun. It's fun. People don't want to be bored. People don't want to, that's why we do the superhero thing. You know, people don't want to go to the gym and be bored. They can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
They come to me, they're going to do something different. They're going to do something fun. It's like, not only are we going to use a mace, we're going to use the hammer that I used dressed as Thor last week in the video that we did. And we're going to swing that against this tire. And we're going to, you know, then maybe I'll make a mashup video of me doing it as Thor and you doing it as a client. I'll put it together. And that's the other thing is the clients that train with me, they kind of know what we're doing. They love the idea of being like, I want to be in one of your videos. Like, I want to be like, we want to be part of this. It's a really cool, you know, community experience. And yeah, to the whole primal thing. Oh yeah. I love functional training. I think there's nothing more functional than, I mean, moving weight, pushing sleds, swinging items that are off balanced off your head. And I mean, hammer training is a great, great adaptation of that. Cause you've got it's an old shout out to the Banff hammer there. That guy's freaking warehouse burned down, man.
Oh,
isn't that terrible? His house was his way, and it burned to the ground. It's rough. That's rough. So we'll give him some love. My on the God. Podcast.
What's his product?
Banff, BAMF. Have y'all ever seen those? The no. Banff hammers?
Oh, what are they?
Oh, dude. So in my right, see the big one?
Yep.
This is a this or that video. So this is comparing the Tribewatt hammers, which are, you know, they're okay. And then the Banff hammer, which is over there on the left. And the one he makes those. And he is, I mean, he's an incredible inventor. You know what it is? It's kind of a shame because he's an incredible inventor that I think kind of never really got off the ground. He had talks with Sorenex at one point, or maybe it was, I can't remember. He had talks with some big company about manufacturing these, and it never got off the ground. So he did them himself. Mm. And they are made of this really, really dense rubber material.
Oh, wow.
And what makes that special is you don't need a tire. You can bang that on your ground, bang it anywhere.
Yeah.
So he has, we've done a lot. He's great. He loves what we're doing and we love what he makes. So he and I have collaborated on a lot of different stuff.
How can people get that hammer if they're interested? Like, what's his website or?
You know, to tell you the truth, bud, he did a video last
month. Oh, he might not be able to get anything.
He may not be able to get, he announced that, hey, if you have Banff hammers now, they're now a collectible. I have no doubt that he'll come back.
Oh, man.
But he, for now, I think he's out of production. But BAMF, which we all know what that stands for, Banff, just do that on Instagram. He's on there. And if anybody wants to, you know, send him a message, I'm sure, well, I'm not sure. I hope he'll be able to get more in production eventually because they are incredible. They're decently footprinted and they're very, very reasonably priced too.
The other thing I like about what you're saying is, you know, when you have somebody squatting like 315 or something like that, not all clients can do that. Mm. And there's a lot of people that are like, that's not, or bench pressing four plates or, you know, any of these kind of powerlifting movements or doing overhead presses and some stuff like that. And people have experience, like a lot of people have some experience with some of these things and they kind of understand like that hurts when I do that. But when someone's using a mace or someone's using a hammer like that, or someone's flipping a tire, they probably don't have much, to relate it to, and they probably like have never tried it before. Mm-mm. And when you're like, you can flip that 250 pound tire, they're probably like, no, I can't. And you're like, no, you've been training here for a little while. You're going to be able to flip the tire. It's a little bit of technique and it might not be easy, but you're going to be able to do it. And then they're able to do it. And then they're super surprised at themselves. Right.
And they're so thrilled. It's because it's something that, you know, it's so functional. It's so practical for everyday use. And again, back to that, you know, lifting the Beretta thing, putting it in. There's a perfect example of something where in everyday life, she could never do this. She texted me, I don't want to cry on this podcast, but she texted me that she could never decorate her Christmas tree every year with her kids. She could never do that. And that last year was the very first time she could ever do that. It's stuff like that. That is, I love that what we get to do helps people genuinely helps people live a better life. Yeah, she's
was it her like lower back or something she had a problem with, or
it was a lot of different stuff. Yeah, it was a lot of different stuff. Truly, she was as a whole very underweight, not strong, did not have muscle density, just did not have the ability to she specifically pertaining to the tree, she did not feel safe getting on a ladder. Period, the end. Did not even have like the capability to get up onto a stepladder and put up ornaments. So, you know, it's just stuff like that. And this, again, this is going back earlier. She has progressed so much. Now she does that with the Fit Fighter across her shoulders. So she has just grown. And that's just one example. I love working with, of course, I love working with the, you know, top tier guys and, you know, changing somebody maybe a fraction of 2% on their whatever. But it's a lot cooler to train with somebody that has like, you know, they can improve 40, 50, 60% of their human existence just by coming to you a few times a week. That's what I love.
One different thing that's really cool about what you're doing, and we've been talking about this a lot on the podcast as of recent, is that the off-balance stuff that Mark was mentioning, right, mm-hmm. or the off-balance type of equipment, you know, when you're thinking of just lifting, a lot of lifts are just done straight planes, right? But when you're able to actually add in rotation and that type of
transverse
movement, that's when you really get people, like when you mentioned longevity at the beginning of the podcast, mm-hmm. that's when longevity really starts to come into the picture, because as you get older, if all you've been doing has been doing squatting, curls, presses, your body and your muscle may be strong, but then imagine when you want to go pick up something down at your left side. Mm-hmm. You need to bend down to go get it. Or you need to oddly, like, me fucking having to pick up my puppy sometimes in weird positions. I have to bend and pick him up and I'm in this weird lever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you're old and you're trying to do that, that's when something goes, because you can't rotate well. You don't move well. Mm-hmm. But with the type of training that you're talking about, and these types of things can be added into any type of athlete, no matter if you're a high-level powerlifter, bodybuilder, whatever, you can add this in and become a better human being, not just someone who's very strong.
Oh, yeah. Getting caught up with the numbers, getting stuck on, I know y'all have a leadership board, but getting focused on the leadership board and kind of not accounting for all the accessory movements and all the stuff that I need to do to, you know, work on my stabilizers and work on my range of motion and all that kind of stuff. And like you said, anybody can do it. So much of the equipment that you need in order to do this stuff is like the cheaper stuff, like mm-hmm. the least expensive stuff. Like stick mobility. You ever seen their stuff? I mean, three of those sticks, that's not that much. Anybody can get those. Everybody should have them. Every single human being should have those and should be using them. Mm-hmm. That is something that, I mean, that's just an example. There are certain things that we should always have, whether you're going to the gym or whether you're working out with a trainer, that can make you a better human being. Mm-hmm. And if you're a high level guy, I mean, you should already know about this. If you don't, then something's wrong with your coach. Every single athlete in the world, but I think every single athlete in the entire world should be training with the methods that, you know, that we use. Every single, in some capacity. I mean, obviously the lifts will vary and the weights will vary because you're a different specimen than somebody else. But the way that we're training, every single athlete in the world should be using.
So you're here because you have the most pimped out garage gym in the universe, probably.
Oh, thanks, bud.
It's fucking amazing.
Now, like,
isn't that dope? Oh, I forgot about that picture. Look at that.
That's so cool.
The before and after. That's a trip.
How big is that space,
dude? It's not that big.
Because
we got 600 square foot under roof, and then we got another 1500 in the back. See, that's the big thing. Is we changed the whole outline of that. We still have the door on the right side, but the left one we closed. Essentially, we closed in the whole place. I put insulation in the ceiling. I put a split system on the wall, so it's AC. And there's a door in the back that goes directly to the backyard. So clients come in. It's totally separate from the house. Clients come in through the back gate. They come in. We do meet in the gym. We do our workout. Obviously, that's usually indoor, outdoor, because there's a lot of stuff you need room for. And then in the back is the sauna, the ice bath, the endless pool pretty soon. And then, that's phase two.
Wow.
But it's pretty cool.
And do you live here? You mm-hmm. live there?
Yeah.
Is any part of that weird? You know, I got people training in the garage, or does that work out okay?
It actually works out beautifully. It could not be better. I couldn't be happier with it. Because of the way we train, because we only do one-on-one or semi-private, and it's all me. That's the thing, too, is we have a four-person team, but I'm the only coach. Everything else is – our expansion is primarily through, you know, online sector. Of course, we're doing a lot more seminar work. We can talk about that as well. But the in-person training, that's all me. So I get to work with the schedule. I get to work with the periodization, and I get to work with the clients. And the best thing about this is the growth that we've seen has been through collaborations. And that's, I mean, this is the culmination of all that at this moment. And thank you guys again. I want to make sure that I say this, you know, out loud and everything. Thank you so much for having us on. This is a true honor.
But like I said through email, you made this shit happen because we were actually going back and forth, and I got him confused with another Brandon that was trying to get Mark on his show. So right after I talked to Mark about it, I was writing back Brandon. I was just like, oh, hey, sorry, dude. We're going to focus on our own stuff. And you're like, no, that's not what I was asking for. And I was like, wait, what? And then I looked you up and I'm like, oh, fuck, dude, my bad. Like, yes, let's make this happen. So I mean, yes, thank you. We appreciate you and your time, but like, I just want you to know, like, you made this happen.
Thanks,
which I love, because a lot of people are just like, oh, he got lucky, or, you know, like, people get mad at other people, but
of course, yeah,
you made this shit happen, and I'm really stoked that you're here.
Me too, bro. Yeah. Thank you, Andrew, for being the point of contact on this and everything. Mm-hmm. No, you know, making it happen, that's the key to actually making an entrepreneur. That is the one thing that you just have to realize, is that in order for anything to succeed, if it's just you, it's just you. And, you know, like I said, I've got a 4-person team now. In the beginning, I didn't have any of that. So being at a place where you have to realize that, you know, no one's coming, like, no one's going to make anything happen. You've got to be the guy to clean the floors, clean the bathroom, and do all the gym stuff. Like, you got to be able to do it all. That is,
these are the dopest dumbbells I've ever seen.
Oh, aren't they?
Dude, those are sick. Oh, yeah, man. Are those custom made, or, like, where'd you get them?
I got those. You'd have a hard time getting them now. They're from Russia. Yeah, you're not going to be able to get those anymore.
All right. Wow.
They're in kilograms, and I mean those. That was a later iteration. We had dumbbells before. Of course, I had to get those because as the brand progressed and as we became, you know, the superhero, the comic book gym, I'm like, well, I know those exist. I got to figure out a way to get them. But most of our stuff now, as I mentioned, comes through collaboration. Most of these companies and stuff that we deal with, it's cool because it's at a point now where they also reach out to us.
Right.
And there's value on both sides of the equation now. Mm-hmm. And that is the big thing that I want to kind of bring to the table for the community, especially for the garage gym community. There are a lot of trainers right now that are really looking inward. And that's in large part because of COVID. I mean, a lot of trainers had to go inward. They're like, well, like, kind of have to train from my house now. I got to figure out a way to get mobile. I got to get park workouts in. I need to figure out a way to do this. And we get that question a lot too. Did you do this in response to COVID? And I always say, like, no, man, we've been doing this for, you know, 7 years now. It's just happened to happen when COVID happened that took off. But bringing this as a alternative business model for professionals and for people who actually want to do training and want to be somebody who's somewhat of an expert, doing it this way is a very different, because most people, it's all right, you know, maybe I get a certification, maybe I go to school, I get out, I go to Lifetime Fitness, I train there, I build up my client base, and then I leave and I get my own place. And hopefully they come with me, maybe not, I don't know. But that's kind of the way that everyone grows in the industry, I found. And I didn't do any of that. As I mentioned to you, I trained with Ian Danny when I was younger. So that was an incredible opportunity to get the, you know, the proper mechanisms down for training. But for business expansion, that was all trial and error later on. And doing it this way was sort of just a passion project that never stopped. I don't believe in luck. I don't believe people get lucky. I think, I mean, to a degree perhaps, but in my opinion, the people that get success, they earned it. They did something to create who they are. You know, most successful people aren't stupid. And being able to get to this point required a lot of hard work and trial and error. And the cool thing is that now there's a specific place in the market for it. There's a lot of trainers that are looking to do it. A lot of people who want to train in these kinds of environments. This is the video that I was referencing to you, Mark, earlier. This is the Viking press set up with the Henny attachment. See how I got the landmine?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Then the Henny. Then the plate, then the Elite.
That's sick.
It's perfect.
That's creative.
It's the best.
Now, with Ian Danny, like, first of all, Ian is, like, probably the person that knows the most about training that I ever met in my life. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. Same here.
Understudy of Charles Poliquin. You know, training with someone like that is not inexpensive. So what was the, and you interned for him, is like, so you got personal training from him and you interned for him.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big commitment. What was the reason behind the commitment?
at the time, we had a family friend who had a brief tryout with the Buffalo Bills, and he was training with Ian. And he kind of got me in the door at all, because even if you were willing to pay for it, Ian isn't just going to intern anybody. He's not just going to let anybody do this. He took me in and said, hey, look, you know, this kid, he's 17. He really wants to do this. He loves sports. He thinks he wants to do a train. And at the time, I mean, I could sit here and say, oh, I was the savant at 17. I knew I wanted to do this garage gym empire. I didn't know any of that. I didn't have any idea what I was going to do. But I knew I liked being physically active. I knew I liked training and lifting weights and watching Arnold and all that stuff. So I started going. And in the beginning, it was a situation where at the time, I mean, I was 17, I couldn't afford Ian. My dad, he said, all right, look, you know, you want to do this. You're doing an internship in some capacity. I will basically foot the bill to get you to do this because you say you want to learn how to do it. And I want you to learn how to do it right. So that turned into a 4-year on and off relationship where I was actually starting school and all through college. I would come back. And in the summer times, I would always train with Ian. And that's kind of what I did. That gave me the foundation of everything I know today about strength training. It shaped, I didn't even know how to bench press. I didn't even know how to do nothing. I knew nothing about anatomy, nothing about exercise phys. All of that took off. But to your earlier question, I mean, yeah, that was a big investment, big monetary investment, big investment of time. I trained with him 5 days a week in the summer times.
Wow.
And Ian, I mean, I'm sure Ian's probably charging now. I mean, probably $250, $350 a session now. I mean, I'm sure the athletes he's with, I mean, what do they care? They make, you know, $10 million a year. But yeah, it unbelievable. And I don't do classes. I've never done that. I don't have a boot camp mentality. Frankly, I have a fundamental issue with camps or classes in general. I just don't like them. I think there's too much missing. But doing it his way and learning only the one-on-one training motive or, you know, method taught me how to do what I do today perfectly. Couldn't be any better. I modeled everything I built off of his model at a smaller scale. That's essentially, if you'd asked me at the beginning of this, how do you want this to look? I'd be like, I want performance enhancement professionals, but I want it for Gen Pop. I want normal people to be able to go to Ian's for less money. That's the way I kind of thought about it in my head.
Yeah, well, he has a gym, and then he has a section of his gym where he gives people like post-workout nutrition.
Yeah.
And then the upstairs of his gym is all
PT and
devoted to, recovery. And guys are in there eating, and they got the things blown up on their legs.
Yeah,
the Norma Tech. And all the other shit they got up there.
And even I gotta get him one of the ice tubs too, because he's got one, but his is like, you have to shovel the ice in there every time. I know, cause I did that. I'm like, all right, I'll go fill up the tub and shovel in ice every time. His methods, at least when I was there, he wasn't quite doing it the way that we're doing it now. Mm. And that's also fun as well. When you start doing your schooling or your method, and I'm almost done with my master's. I got one more class left. When you do that kind of thing and you have practical knowledge going with it, and that's what I found to be so much fun about all the things we're doing kind of together. I'm doing a lot of research from the schooling side, and I'm also doing all the clients, and I'm being able to build actual physical things that complement both, put them together and give them to human beings. That's the big, I think, drawback, and justifiably so, to these kind of overeducated PhD trainers so oftentimes, where you're like, okay, yeah, you know, doctor, whatever, but you don't actually have any experience with any real people. You're a professional student. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to really do that. And I never saw myself as, you know, going this far in school, but I see a real value in being able to bring that from all areas, but especially with the educational side as well.
Now, it's pretty awesome that you've been able to get the best of both worlds. Like, you are going to school, getting all of that side. You're practically working with people and you're seeing what works. From what you've been learning in school and what you've been learning practically in training with trainers on the field and learning with trainers on the field, where have you seen your schooling may be behind as far as X-Phys is concerned? Do you think it's keeping up with what we're learning right now in the field? Or is there anything that you've been doing that you've been like, this is a little bit outdated, or this is a little bit behind? Because a lot of people, when they're getting into the idea of wanting to learn and train with people, they if they haven't been listening to people in the field, people doing shows like yours and ours, they may think that the schooling way is the best and only way. But a lot of people do that. When they get on the field, they're like, oh shit, I really don't even know what the fuck to do when I'm working with somebody, or or what works, or how to deal with different types of populations. Mm-hmm. So where do you feel, if there is anywhere, I don't want to assume, sure, but if there's anywhere that the schooling is falling behind, where would it be?
Well, I can speak to the areas of schooling that I've focused on. And it's, of course, from what I've studied and most of my research thus far, and I'm in a capstone class, so I'm actually able to kind of hone it in on one subject, okay, and that is on recovery. Mm-hmm. Recovery and specifically contrast therapy, that's one area where the schooling is, I think, way behind the actual practical. And that is because the schooling, the overall consensus from the entire community is that we don't know. That's the answer to the question of whether or not the contrast therapy actually does anything, whether or not it helps with recovery, whether or not it cuts down into your hypertrophy and you actually lose muscle mass. The overall consensus is we don't know. We need more research. Mm. So there's one area where, you know, that could be something where, okay, we need more schooling in order to actually come up with real data. And the only way to get real data on this is to use real people. Mm. And I haven't found a study that's done it kind of the way I want to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, you sort of have to have a few things in place just to conduct the research that I want to do. Namely, you have to have the contrast therapy ready to go right after you do the high intensity interval training or whatever it is you want to do, phase one.
Yeah.
You have to have those things both on hand, both ready to go. So you're already kind of cutting the margin because you have to have an elite training facility just to even do the research, period. That's one area where I think the schooling is definitely behind. Mm-hmm. I've found, numerous other areas where you'll have high level coaches that'll have certain, I don't think a degree really means all that much. I do see the value in doing it because it does bring sort of justification to the words you speak. But I have found numerous areas. One subject I just talked about was the subject of velocity training and how exactly that can be implemented into powerlifting. And, mm-hmm. and I didn't know anything about that. So that was one area where schooling really helped me out. But by and large, I think most people learn a lot more from the practical. So is the schooling behind? Is practical more important? I would say yes, practical is more important. And a coach that had to choose between one should always go with the practical. I think that answered the question. Okay.
What do people need and what do they not need when they're starting a garage gym with the intention to, like, train people?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, the first thing I think you need to have is some kind of a vision on what demographic you want to train, like how you want to do it. See, because if I want to be a boot camp leader, if I want to do a classroom type setting, then I'm going to probably select a different assortment of equipment than I am if I'm going to be a one-on-one guy. See, everything that I put in my facility, and again, I had a great mentor, I saw what one-on-one looked like in person, and I could call up Brian, who's the PT guy over at PEP, or I could text Ian and say, hey, what is this? Where did you get this? I had that at my disposal. Most people don't. Yeah. I suppose they have me, but that's not, I don't think, the same. In order to understand where to even start your vision, you first have to understand what you want to do with it. Like, who do you want to train and in what capacity? How many people do you want to do? If we were talking specifics on equipment, of course, I would say probably dumbbells, a rack, some weights, a functional trainer. I'd probably go free motion or maybe tough stuff, something like that. That's something that I would definitely implement. I've changed my opinion on that one quite a bit. I used to have one of the vertical functional trainers. We just go up and down, up and down. Having the one now with the arms, I don't know. Do y'all have one of those? The one that I didn't notice one. That's changed a lot for me. And specifically,
we have like the cable crossover kind of deal. So we have,
which is what I had. This will show the difference.
Pretty good variety.
That's the old one, and then we'll pay him. That's the new one.
That is so sick. I love this machine right here.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah,
those are pretty fucking awesome.
You guys got to get in touch with
so much shit. You can do that.
Plate Snacks.
Plate Snacks.
You ever seen that guy's company?
No.
Oh, dude. So look at this. So Plate Snacks, he designs these decals. He and I worked on this. He designed the decals that'll go over your old plates. So that's, if you really have old busted plates, you can cover them, make your own stuff.
Nice.
So that's our logo and the comic book number. And he's a big fan. He loves what we do. He's always messaging me.
That's such a nice machine.
It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's such a good looking machine. With the LEDs.
That's sick. Yeah, I got the one that just has like the pulleys just go up and down on the sides. It's like always almost perfect, but it's good enough, you know, for a home gym for me.
My biggest beef with it was it could not do flies. I couldn't do wide flies. I would always kind of come to here, and that was about it. With those, I mean, I can expand the arms out 6 feet in each direction. And even in my small space, it works. I can do all the movements with that thing. And that's another big point to bring up. When you're doing an at-home garage gym, you have to factor in footprint quite heavily whenever you're purchasing. You have to not only think of, okay, the actual footprint of the machine, but you have to think about the workable footprint on movement. Something like that. You can't just have the small, because the tough stuff has really small footprint. It's only like 2x4, but the arms go out 6 feet in either direction. So you need to make sure you have the space to do that. That is a big point. Just organization. That's a big thing you're going to have if you are somebody who wants to build from home and you want to do that from the exercise side of things. There's so much more at the expansion of the brand. Be creative. That's something that I would really, really emphasize. For me, that was second nature. I've always had a very kind of somewhat crazy mind. I'm always thinking. I'm always just kind of creating in my head since I was a little kid. I like to draw. I like to create in that way. But I found a very fun integration of that into our gym and into the business. And that's, you know, bringing on Eli, he's the same way. He's every bit as creative as I am. And so much of the content that we've created has been the collaboration of both our minds. He and I think in very different ways. That's another really important topic. Get people around you that think differently from you. Get people around you that are smarter than you in areas where you know you're weak. That's a big, that applies to anything, of course. But to doing this, I really see this as a big, big future for the industry. Trainers doing this from their home. That's it. I mean, right off the bat, you'll realize once you start doing this, I mean, first off, everything for me is a write-off. Everything. My SRP, all my equipment, my electric bill, my water bill, everything I do is a tax write-off. And all the stuff that I build, it's all in-house, so my house is a tax. You know, all of you will have an amazing, just from the business side of things, from doing this kind of thing at home. At-home businesses flourish because of that. But an at-home gym business, because if you're going to take it really seriously and you're going to put, you know, 100, 200K into whatever your equipment will be, you're going to need to know what you stand to make on the back end and how you will save money on your overhead. That's the thing that kills most trainers. They go out, they try to go from, you know, going from point A to point B. If point A is LA Fitness, where there is no overhead, you know, you just have to pay the fee for the gym, then you go out and you do your own thing. But if you make that step, okay, well now all of a sudden I got $3,600 a month where I have to pay that no matter what happens. And maybe I'm leading a class, maybe I'm doing private training, but most likely not. Most trainers cannot survive doing one-on-one. And that's, again, it's why our brand is just kind of unique. Because the only way we'd be able to get to this point, we built slowly, extremely slowly. Mm-hmm. He made a video last month, I'll find it and send it to you guys, where it's kind of the gym now, like how it was then and how it is now. And it shows how before we had lighting, before we had anything, you know, 7 years ago when I started doing this, the only way that it was able to do this is because I was, you know, at that point, I would comfortably say I had some vision. I knew what I wanted to do, and I was willing to reinvest almost all my earnings back into this with the goal of, okay, well, here's where I'm at. Here's 5 years. Here's 10 years. And we're at 7 years. So I'd say in my mind, we've probably exceeded my five-year goal, but I'm still thinking about 10 years. I'm still thinking. But I didn't make any money for 5 years. And that's uncomfortable. That's some people hear that and they're like, whoa, I can't not make any money for 5 years. But I didn't. I lived off $30,000 a year, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you know, single guy, who cares? It doesn't matter. But everything I did was an investment for the future of me, for the future of the brand. And he's not in the room, so I'm a little bit more comfortable complimenting him without him sitting there. But he came to me. He's got a degree in marketing. TCU. He got out and he told me, he goes, you know, I don't think you know what it is you're doing. You think of yourself as a trainer in your garage. That's fine. That's wrong. You don't realize where the expansion of your brand can go. here's what we need to do. He's the reason we have the funnels from all of the social media markets, and we have a Vimeo channel where people get subscription models where they can see all of our movement patterns, and we can do, you know, obviously custom online training, and we can do the in-person training, but all of that brand awareness and creating that, because it is a full-time thing, and I wouldn't be able to do it. Couldn't do it. Not a chance. Having somebody like that who understands that, that's where the expansion can go for somebody who wants to go from being a garage gym owner to a garage gym empire, creating the idea of a franchise. And that's another thing that, you know, can happen. Hmm. If your brand has recognition and awareness and you get to those, you know, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 followers, so on and so forth, you know, people start to now, they want to be a part of it. How do I do that? What should I do? Okay, well, you know, now we can create a curriculum. We can make a program. We can get to you and say, all right, here's a list of all the equipment manufacturers we work with. Here's their affiliation codes. Here's the discounts if you go through us. Here's the X amount of dollars to get you to this stage, X amount to get you here. Here's our programming. You can make modules on how – this isn't even – we haven't even talked about training. Like, yeah, you can create training modules based on, you know, because we're doing our – the contrast therapy, the strength training, all of that. All that goes in this. All of this is scalable. All of it is scalable for the garage gym owner to create more and more and more in a larger empire. And that's what's so exciting about it, is that we're getting to kind of live it. And it's going at a rate that is, you know, we're happy with it. Yeah, all of that is, yeah, all that is to say that this is not as limited as people think it will be. Mm. Because, of course, in my mind, especially, I was totally guilty of this. Before he came on board, I was thinking, all right, well, you know, all right, let's be optimistic. I can charge $150 a session, but I'm still going to be capped at whatever that comes out to in a year. I mean, let's say I train 9 hours a day. Well, I'm going to definitely get burned out at 9 hours a day. I mean, I'll do it, $150 an hour, 9 hours a day. I mean, that's decent. That's good money, but I'm still capped. The more you realize that there is real chance inside of, you know, online expansion, for this to never have a ceiling, for it to just keep going and keep growing and to create a brand that will grow on itself and work for you, that is where you can really take something that is, you know, just a one-on-one operation and make it into an actual, I love the word empire, just make it into that. Mm. Yeah.
I think I like what you said in the beginning. You mentioned building off of a vision. You said you have to have a vision, and then off the vision, you're going to make decisions. And I think that is really good recommendation for people. It all starts with an idea. It starts with a concept. It starts with an invention. And then it starts with some sort of action towards that.
Oh yeah.
And what you said, I kind of like reading between the lines, it doesn't fucking matter what you get. It doesn't matter what you have. It matters who you are and what you've become and what you're able to share. Because people that just want to get in shape, they don't give a fuck, and they don't know what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I think in CM at his house, you have a couple kettlebells, you have a jump rope, right?
Mm-hmm. Kettlebells, jump rope, slant board. I recently got the base box equipment since I'm doing a lot of calisthenics, but it's minimal.
Yeah, I'd go train with him. You know, if he was like, dude, like, hey, come train with me. I'm going to help you.
Oh, yeah, because he's who he is.
People in jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. You know, I'm be like, fuck, okay, well, he's pretty fucking jacked. Looks like he knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And so people having a good, they don't have to be as advanced as he is, but people having some sort of good base originally and having some sort of knowledge is really all you kind of need. You don't need a lot more, although it helps, because then you can charge more and you have... You open up your garage door and there's like real shit in there. It's not just a kettlebell. That does help a lot. But just to get started, it doesn't matter if you spend $300 or if you spend $30,000.
Amen.
Just get started. And hopefully in getting started, you at least have some knowledge and you have a vision and an idea to base everything off of.
Oh, yeah. And to piggyback off what you just said about, you know, Nsema, your people are paying for you. People want to see... you know, all sides of you. They want to work with whatever it is that you're doing. They're buying your presence as much as the most people don't care about what kind of equipment you have. I mean, yeah, they'll come in, you know, they'll be like, whoa, this is amazing. Like, but that's not why they're there. People oftentimes are attracted to the trainer much more than the training. They want to be a part of the energy that you bring. And that's another reason why you have to love what you're doing in this industry. You got to be real excited about your training methods and what you get to do. And I don't know what it's like to go to work. I don't know what that feels like to get up and have to go to work. I never work. I work 7 days a week all day long because I never work. That is the kind of energy that I bring to the clients, to the experience, and to the content. Everything we do is so much fun. And, you know, again, this is a perfect, the models I paint, you know, that's something, you know, that has nothing to do with anything. But people see that, they're like, wow, this guy's like nerdy and kind of relatable. And like, yeah, all right, I could see myself working with him. I mean, he's, you know, he's kind of a normal guy. He's got some weird, you know, thing going on the side. That's fine. That's a big part of it. And the vision has to be reflective of that. You've got to know, yeah, the vision pertains to how you want to train, but you need to also understand that your vision needs to come from you. It's got to be apart from, you know, who you are. If you can't make that happen, you can't, you know, I've never been a real big fan of the fake it till you make it saying. Because I feel like if you fake it long enough, people are going to know that. People are going to recognize it that you're faking it. Like, be real about it until you make it. Or you don't, but always be real about it. There's way too many people, especially in this industry, faking it until they make it.
What you said there is super important because, like, I think people really, if someone is showing the process of how they're getting somewhere, people really actually appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, people appreciate when you're starting a new endeavor and they see when you actually are not the greatest at it. And then as you progress to it, same thing when you're starting a new type of gym out of your garage or whatever it is. If you start with a few pieces, but you're really good at what you do, people will appreciate that if you can get them what they're looking for. And then as you expand and you do more and more and more, they like seeing the growth. They don't like it. So I agree with you on that. That's very true.
They love the struggle. And who wouldn't? I mean, because that's one.
Everybody does.
I think that's one of the only things we all have in common. Every single one of us will struggle. Mm-hmm. And being around people who have struggled and succeeded, that's magnetic. It's why, I mean, I can feel the energy in this room. I mean, all three of us are kind of on the same wavelength. And we get to bring some of that to people who perhaps aren't. Somebody who isn't living the dream they hoped they would. Somebody who doesn't have it all the way they want it. And not to say that, you know, any one of us does, but bringing that to your vision for your brand, and especially if you're trying to do something on your own, from your house, original to you, that has to be there. It's got to be at the forefront of you as a company. You've got to be able to bring that to the person looking at you. Mm. It's so huge.
What has some of these, I don't know if you trail run or if you just go on walk on trails, but what has that done for you mentally? Because you mentioned the cold and hot therapy doing some really cool shit for you mentally. Where has that taken you?
Trail, hiking and that
hiking,
kind of thing.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, I've been an avid hiker since I was a little kid. My dad used to take us to Camelback Mountain, honestly, probably since I was born. He did it since he was a younger man, so he did me on the back. I love it. I love it. That's the thing where, I mean, I... There's very few things in life where I'm like, yeah, I'll challenge anybody. Like, no, I'm never going to out bench or deadlift any of you guys. But like, if you come to AZ and we try to hike Camelback Mountain, I'll beat just about anybody up that mountain. For a while, I had a record. I don't know what it happened to it now, but that's the thing I do probably the most consistently still to this day. It's just amazing.
How many miles is it?
It's not that far. Now, Camelback specifically, it's not that far. It's really, it's under two miles. It's just vertical. Mm. It's straight up. It's right in, it's kind of near Ian's. It's like, it's like Scottsdale, right in the heart of Scottsdale. Mm. Everyone hikes it. Bro, people die there all the time. It's nuts.
What, they just fall?
More people die there than Everest.
No.
Whoa.
Because there's thousands of people hiking it. Oh. And the thing is, in the summer, people don't get it. They go there and they're like, okay, it's Scottsdale. Yeah, it's in the middle of the day, but how bad could it really be? It's in the middle of Scottsdale. There was a chick last year that died. Get this. She went there on like a Tinder date and the dude left her halfway and she died. Yeah.
Wait, it's just 23. Well, it took you 20. Okay, you did fast.
I did fast.
So that's 23 minutes is fast. So what do usually average people go up there? What are they expecting to do? Like maybe an hour?
I would say average people could probably break an hour. Probably between 40 to 50 minutes, something like that. Yeah. It's with something like that because it is such an like an anaerobic form of cardio, there really isn't that much room for change in time.
Like, and they're
like,
dying because of the heat.
Yeah, that.
Not like falling to their death.
They're dying. Well, one dude got attacked by bees and he fell off a cliff. Oh, Jesus. mostly it's the heat. Mostly people get disoriented. It's also not really that clearly marked. So the trailhead, as you go up, it's serpentines, and people who don't know it, they go up there in the summer. There's no one on it. There's nobody on the mountain. So they get lost and then they get stuck. And so, yeah, they've had people, you know, usually like, man, I think maybe one or two people a year.
You totally sold me on it and then totally convinced me to not go.
Yeah, well, when we go, we got to go with this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a blast. I love that. Oh,
are you running it?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call it, you know, rucking because it's kind of running, but not really. You're sort of just keeping that pace going.
You can't always run, too, because, like, there's people and there's... Like,
That's mm-hmm. flat iron. There are some of the best hiking I've ever found in the world in Arizona. Arizona's got some beautiful hiking.
That's amazing.
That's flat iron. That's the Superstition Mounds. That's much longer.
Why do they call it the Superstition Mounds?
There was apparently a giant chest of gold that was left up there. Mm-hmm. And because of that, all these people started going up there and tried to find it. And they ended up all dying. Like, people would just go in. And this is back before, I guess, Arizona was like even colonized or something. So people would just go up there and just like try to find it. And they would die. Arizona in the summer is not to be messed with. If you're not used to it, it's because you're talking temperatures of 110, 112, maybe even higher sometimes. Wow. It can get rough out there in AZ.
That is wild. You probably need to, when you do stuff like that, you probably need to be well equipped. You probably need, you know, water and electrolytes and snacks and shit like that. Even though you're going quick, something could happen. Right?
For Camelback, for me, I mean, I'll bring a water bottle like this, right, just because I know I'm you're up in 23, I'm down in 15, I'm done. It's not that big of a deal. That guy, I mean, I took a picture with him because I was just so inspired. He made it. Can't believe he made it. It's awesome. It's amazing he did it.
The way you said that. He made it. I can't believe he made it, but he made it. Goddamn.
The bigger guy.
Honestly, when I saw him, and his youth is what is doing it for him at this time. Again, I'm happy he's doing it. Don't know how safe it is. I saw a guy drop dead in front of his daughter once.
You saw it in person?
Dude, I've seen three people die in front of me on Camelback Mountain. I saw one girl fall free soloing. She fell like 100 feet and hit the ground. Yeah, that was a rough one. I saw that. I saw a guy drop dead of a heart attack in front of his kid. And then the third one was that girl I mentioned who went there and the guy left her. And that one, I actually didn't see her die. I just saw when they found her. But yeah, it's rough. Arizona can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. But good for him, man. I mean,
you listen to music when you're doing that? Are you trying just to be connected to nature, or how's it go for you?
It depends. Usually music, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't, and it's not even just to be with nature. I actually love the opportunity to, especially on the way down, to interact with people, mm-hmm. because I found it's a pretty cool conversation starter when I go up and then I come back down, because usually the people that I see going back down, they're always like, whoa, did you already get to them? I'm like, yeah, man, I did. Like, good for you. They're like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Right. And then occasionally I'll tell them. It's a cool way to start the conversation about, you know, training or anything like that. So I'll keep the music off, but, it depends. On the way up, I usually put it in, zone out, and just huck it up there.
Fat Project family, how's it going? Now, we like to look good in the gym and out of the gym. That's why you always see Mark and I, and Andrew is stepping up on the short game, wearing shorts from Vuori and clothes from Vuori. And honestly, the number one compliment that I've seen, that I've gotten, and even Mark's gotten, is, damn, your butt looks good. And that's because, well, the clothes we wear make our booties look delicious. Andrew, how can they get it?
Yeah, you guys both have pretty big wagons. You guys can head over to Vuori.com/Power Project. That's Vuori.com/Power Project to receive 20% off the most amazing apparel that looks so good inside and outside of the
gym. It's going to make your ass look fat,
and your ass like will that. Look fat. Links to them down in the description, as well as the podcast show notes. God damn it.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Make your ass look fat.
What have you found has happened to your feet? Because you said you've been wearing those Vibrams for a year now, right? So have you noticed a difference in, like, Because, like, for example, we wear Vivos. They're barefoot shoes, right?
Yeah.
Wider, the minimal sole. Even Andrew has mentioned how he notices how his feet have gotten stronger.
Way stronger.
So how have you noticed, like, what kind of change have you noticed wearing the Vibrams? Because they're also pretty minimal type of shoes.
Oh, yeah. Big time. So I was wearing I think I was wearing Adidas prior to this. Yeah, and my feet, I was just wearing normal shoes, and my feet were always hurting. And I'm always on my feet because I'm training. I'm always standing and moving and all that stuff. And yeah, my feet, when I would go to bed, they would hurt. And when I would wake up, they would hurt. They would just hurt. And I was thinking, what is this? And so I seen
And you still hiked a lot, right?
Yeah.
You were still doing that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was still doing it. But I was wearing hiking shoes, big, thick soles. You know, I was wearing Nike Trail Runner, the Horse Pass ones, which are great shoes for that sort of thing. I've completely shifted my mentality on feet. Just totally. The big thing that did it in for me was a combination of two things. Seedman had something. Dr. Joel Seedman, he was talking about this on one of the podcasts I heard him in. And Stick Mobility had a they have a certification, and they were talking about neural drive and how feet, hands and feet. I mean, you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. Hands and feet are the beginnings of that. And essentially, when we wear shoes, you're coddling that arch your entire life. You don't realize that your heel's up here and your toe's down here. Well, why is that? That's wrong. That's not right. All shoe companies are designed for you to wear the shoes, you know, wear them out. Your feet hurt, so you need more shoes, and you keep going, you keep going. They're designed first and foremost as a product, not as a, you know, they're not designed to make you a better person. Yep. They're designed to get you to buy more shoes, and they look cool. But what I have found is that now changing my mentality toward feet, as opposed to, you know, okay, I need to wear thicker shoes to keep my feet safe. No, now I'm doing the opposite. Now I'm going a minimalist way to strengthen my feet. I want to train through these problems as opposed to like training around them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have found. And I'll say this right out of the gate. You know, you mentioned this because I do hike in Vibram. I do. I didn't do that in the beginning. And if anybody is making a transition from normal to minimalist shoes in any capacity, no matter what shoe it is, don't go run a marathon your first week doing this. Like, you're going to have... Your feet are going to be sore for a month just from wearing them, not even exercising in them. And I didn't do hiking in my Vibrams for at least 60 days. Mm-hmm. I wore them. I got used to training in them. And then I realized, like, wow, my feet don't hurt, like, at all.
Yeah.
Like, I wake up, I'm ready to go, I'm fine. Because you're always in the same exact position all the time because your feet are barefoot, pretty much. I mean, there is nothing on this. It's like I don't know, a centimeter thick. So,
have you
tiny.
Ever tried Vivos or no?
No, I know about them. Again, I think that's the brand. I think that's who Seedman was talking about.
It is because I've seen Seedman them on your those feet. Too.
Yeah, they're wider, right?
Yeah,
they're wide and
they're literally like this.
Yeah.
So these are one of their trail running shoes. But I wear these out and like in the gym too. There's a lot. But literally they're super minimal. You can fucking
Just bend them up into a ball.
Yeah, they're fucking sick. And Andrew, like, I think it's made the biggest difference for him than anybody else.
It's been huge. So like it was funny because I walked on it yesterday, but like, you know, the yellow, like bumpy, like caution things when you're walking on a sidewalk.
Yeah. Okay. For the blind.
Yeah. So like I would walk on those with like normal shoes and be like, ow, ow, like it would hurt. Like I'd have to like be super light, or like even barefoot, like in the kitchen, I'd be like, gosh, I got to go get my slippers.
Yeah. In the kitchen.
Dude, now it's night and day difference. Like I've been wearing them for probably a little bit over 3 months now, but even before that, like they've gotten so much stronger to where like I can walk over rocks and shit and like not really know. Like I noticed, but like I just feel it. It's no longer like a owie, like I hurt myself.
Yeah.
It's like I had no idea that I had such weak feet. You know, like I knew they weren't strong.
Me too.
But I didn't think I was like, it was like a detriment. I just thought it was like, oh, that's just what happens when, you know, you get older.
And as somebody who, I mean, every single person in this room trains exceptionally hard, more than almost anybody else we know. To have this part on our body that is so important. I mean, your feet, you're literally using them every single day, no matter what you do. And they all suck.
Yeah.
Like that is crazy. We've literally been sold a lie.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's a giant lie that we should be wearing shoes. Who in the world thought that was a good idea? It's crazy. But it has changed everything for me. Now, I mean, when I have noticed, first off, anatomically, my feet, I have noticed when I look at them, are thicker.
Yep.
My foot is actually thicker.
I thought I had a fat foot already. Like, it's made a difference.
I'm like, whoa, I'm noticing this. I'm not going to tell anybody till now on this massive podcast. I have bigger feet. Yeah. It got bigger when I stopped wearing shoes. Exactly. Like that. And now I have noticed that when I hike with them.
I mean, there's the pump, so maybe that's what I was thinking. It was working. That's fine.
You know, it's
a combination of the pump and the Vivo shoes made my... Whoa. This is amazing, guys.
The thing that I would advise trying, and this may be something that, you know, y'all haven't done yet. I would love to try those for training, for hiking, having the independent fingers. I have noticed that I am actually able, this is whack. I'm able to grab rocks when I ruck, when I hike my feet. And because I am going up the same exact trail that I did for my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that I am so much more sure on my feet because my toe, I can literally grab like I'm grabbing it with the independence of each one of those toes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, could I do that in those? I don't know. They're both minimalist shoes. So it would certainly be better wearing those than just about anything else you could ever wear. Mm-hmm. But I love the independence of each toe. Because it allows me to do that.
You have a point. I know what you're, I can understand what you're talking about there. Yeah.
I think there is also, and don't quote me on this, but I think there is also some research to back that the individuality of each toe on the Vibram will help eliminate that. This inevitably happens to us as we get older, especially because we wear closed-toed shoes our whole lives. Toes will naturally, you ever see that? Like an old person's toes will cross over.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people with, I had a client with restless leg syndrome, wore these so his toes would not do that. So his toes would not cross over. So I think by wearing these, it will stop or at least slow the process of that potentially happening as you get older and as you age.
Yeah, well, like my son, you know, well, it's been a while, but like he'll like just grab stuff with his feet. And then people are just like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. And I'm like, I think we've all had that ability, but one day we caged our feet and we never let them out.
Yeah.
You know, we lost the like just dexterity, I guess I'll say. I don't think that's the right word, but
it is.
Yeah. So like he can do it just fine because he's never been in a shoe before.
He's always, and when we're kids, we're always barefoot. We run around barefoot all the time. Mm-hmm. And then again, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden you're like, hey man, you can't wear that into the boardroom. I'm like, oh really? Fine. All right. I guess I'll just never, you know, I'll wear shoes for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Do you feel like you, when you're wearing these, it's like at any point in the day, I could just burst into a sprint.
Yep.
I just feel like wearing, like it's not like with shoes. I don't know. It's like, okay, well, let me get on the elliptical for a little bit, and then maybe I'll be able to do some sprints. I feel like I could go and just sprint right now in the shoes.
Like even these, the shoes move. Like I still like my Jordans and shit like that. I'll wear those if I'm just trying to like have something stylish on.
Sure.
But if I'm walking, if I'm going to be on my feet, no, I want to be able to feel the ground and move. Like your feet feel stronger. You think about it, you're in the gym. Obviously, like, you know, producing force, trying to produce, like most people do have weak feet. Now you're trying to produce force through a weak base. Shit.
Yeah. And then my wife, she's not like super clumsy or anything, but when she's now wearing Vivo shoes all the time now, and same thing, she's like, she tried to put on like a regular thick soled shoe and she started like tripping all over the place. She's like, I had no idea how like uncoordinated I was with these thick soled shoes. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, she got rid of them. And so now she's just wearing the Vivo barefoot shoes all everywhere.
Oh yeah. And if you're doing anything active, like hiking, basketball players, they roll their ankles, they hurt their knee. Yeah. It's all the time. And it's all connected. Your feet, your knees, your hips, it all goes up. And starting down there, I mean, I'm somebody who, because I've always been so, you know, outdoors and doing the hike and doing all that stuff, I've rolled my ankle. Shit, I've broke my foot 3 times. I've rolled my ankle. I don't know how many times, but since I started doing, like I mentioned, I started doing the work on the astronaut pad and doing all the tibialis stuff and working and doing the barefoot, like all together, I haven't had anything in a year. Like I haven't rolled my ankle once in a year. It's incredible. And it's so easy. No one knows it. Like, why is it? It's almost like not an accident. Like we don't know about it. It seems like it's been done on purpose. Nothing would surprise me.
What are some of the best pieces of equipment that you've seen in the last couple of years?
Oh,
since you get exposed to so many different things, you know?
Oh, that is fun. And that's the other thing is when I tell people, I'm like, yeah, I'm totally nerdy. I'm like, yeah, I'm science nerdy. I'm comic book nerdy, but I'm also an equipment junkie. I love that. I love learning, you know, the new cutting edge stuff that, and what does it do? Like, how does it interact with the body? What does it do for injuries? What does it do? I just love all that. Mm-hmm.
You were telling me about the barbell that you kind of squeeze. I saw the centrifugal force kind of dumbbell things. Those look interesting.
So the squeeze bar, I haven't gotten yet. Haven't tried it yet. So jury's still out on that one, but I can tell you that from the experience I've had, first off, the XPT power rack, you ever heard of that thing?
I don't believe so.
The XPT power rack.
Just stop me when it. When
Let's
you,
see
when
if we can it. Find it on here. Let's scroll down.
XPT power rack.
Ch-ch-ch-ch. We haven't done that much with it recently. It's okay. Go down. See what she's using there. No. You missed it. Go up. See the private training 101. That one. Yeah. If you play that video, she's in the center square using it. Wait till it kind of goes. It's like a Smith machine is how I describe it, but it's not. Yeah, right there. Okay. It's got a brake system on each one of the handles. And essentially what it does is it moves in two planes of motion. It moves up and down, of course, like a Smith machine, but it also moves back and forth. So when you engage this, it feels free motion.
Whoa.
Feels literally like it's entirely free. Gosh. And because it has that brake system to it, you can do ballistic training. You can do ballistic based reps where what I'll have my clients do is my personal favorite is an RDL. So I'll have my clients, they'll engage the brake system, lift off. So now it's free. They'll go down slowly. They'll go to the base of the RDL. They'll do like 3/4 movements. Then they'll explode, come up and let go. And as soon as you let go, it locks.
Whoa.
So it serves two purposes. You can do the ballistic pattern movements for like high level athletes and that kind of thing. And most of the time it's anybody who I'm having doing that sort of thing understands anatomy, understands what I want them to do. It's not a beginner movement, mm-hmm. but there's also a safety factor to it. And that's if somebody has like, you know, just speaking from a home gym side of things, if somebody wanted to do a power lift or they wanted to do a bench press, for example, and they didn't have a spotter and they didn't feel safe, they could let go and it would just lock right in place. It's the only barbell exercise piece of equipment that I've ever found that does that. And it's all from that brake system, just like a bike. Wow. You literally engage and it moves and you let go and it locks.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm trying to describe it as best I can. But again, the XPT power rack, we've done a lot of stuff on it, but I think it was a little bit earlier in the content on IG anyway. But yeah, that's a very, very, very good one. Not that bad of a footprint either. Of course, you would have to account for a Smith machine, so figure it's a bigger machine just in general. Mm-hmm. The Squat Max MD, that's one that we were out there playing around with in the gym. That is, he's gotta be up there, number one or number two.
Great that you made a whole chart for it because it can be confusing on how to hook up so many different things. The thing's very versatile.
Oh, that's cool. You're
doing in the background. See, it's tough to see right there, but if he pauses it, it's in the, see the red, that chart in the background.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was I created a cheat sheet that I did based off of belt position, bar position, and platform position. So each one of those is accounted for. And of course, everybody would need their own like cheat sheet in their head to understand it. But for me, I know what it means. So I can take something like if I want to do a lateral step up using the bucket on top of the actual platform, I know it's a bucket. I know the bar position. I know the belt position. So it saves time. Other than that, talking about the time it takes to set up, there is nothing wrong with the Squat Max whatsoever. It is a perfect machine. It feels great for no matter what it is you're trying to do. That's probably my favorite exercise on it, lateral step up.
Amazing, yeah.
The only thing I would also mention is that I told Mark this. It does not have a good grip on the base. Mm. It's slick.
And your feet can move around.
Around, especially if you're like me and I've got ours outside. I put grip tape on. It's not a big deal, but I had to cut and measure and put it all on, and now it's fine. It's great. But grip tape and a cheat sheet. Those are the only things I would recommend. Other than that, I mean, Brian Hennessy's awesome, and that's an amazing, amazing invention.
Yeah.
Looks like you get a lot of use out of fat grips.
I do.
Looks like
fat grips.
You put them almost everywhere, right?
On all of them. I use them on all the dumbbells. Fat grips are great. They come in handy a lot for bigger guys who want to just, you know, increase grip strength. As somebody, I did a lot of, you know, rock climbing as a kid. As I mentioned, I did gymnastics. So I did, that's a lot grip strength, you know, rings and bars and all that stuff. That's huge. I see the value in that kind of thing. And Ian, he's the one who first showed me the Watson one. So that's sort of a cheaper version that allows. And I like those more because, as I mentioned to you, you can take them off for the ladies or anybody who doesn't want that big, thick grip. They want a normal bar, or they need a normal bar. That'll help. So I like the Fat Grips. Yeah, they're good.
Have you found that they're really, because some people don't think that they do really that much for the grip, but have you found that they're very useful?
I have, yeah.
That's good.
I found that they do help.
I do like them too.
They make, whatever exercise you're doing is about to be heavier. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about to feel a lot tougher. So if you curled with 40s, now you're back at 30s. Like, you're not going to be able to do the same just because your hands are out here.
Yeah.
And it's, and I mean, same with toes and finger. I think the hands are undertrained. Mm-hmm. I don't think people take the time because it takes time. Mm-hmm. If people do, I mean, I do, I try to hit something forearm related at least once a week. I try to do a little circuit to train for wrists, hands, and forearms.
How do you train your wrists? Let me ask you, how do you strengthen your wrists?
Yeah.
I
have
little bitch wrists.
He actually has big forearms.
Mm-hmm. His forearms are fat.
It's, I think a lot has to do with gymnastics. I think it's a lot from that. And, forearms, if you look at like an athlete, John Cena, you look at like a person, true strength happens at the hands. You ever see somebody who's like, this is not John Cena, but anybody who's like, they're kind of a smaller person, but then you look at their extremity from here down and you're like, you might be a little bit more powerful than people think you are. A lot of jiu-jitsu guys have this. You've got that lower body because this is where power is implemented in that kind of a sport.
Yeah.
All of this has to be addressed. For wrists, I love, I love finger push-ups. That's my personal favorite. I think those are really cool. Yeah, for the wrist, just right here on the ground. I love that. I love doing that. That's Bruce Lee stuff from back in the day. That's a classic. That's a good one. You know what I really like? This is forearms and wrists, but I love the roller. You ever see the roller?
We have that.
Yeah. Get a rack attachable one, though. Do you have one that attaches to the rack?
No.
See, this is the problem. Because if you have one that's suspended in the air, it's deltoids. You're hitting your shoulder just to keep it up. You're like, okay, I'm doing it, yes, but you're not isolating. See, what I'll do is mine attaches to the rack. It's by, I think that may be the only Titan Fitness thing I have in my gym. That goes under the rack. That way I don't have to hold it up. All I focus on is the roll pattern. So it's all wrists. And I'll do 25, 35 pounds.
What about just putting your hands over like a barbell? Would that serve a similar purpose? Like you grab you grab the thing or whatever and put your hands over a barbell so your arms are just resting.
Oh, and doing it for the
So you still have the same
I get what you're saying, yeah.
Bullshit wrist thing that we have. It's not attached to the rack, but you just put your forearms on top of like a barbell that's fixed in the rack.
So that's holding all the weight, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, so you're not like just flexing your shoulders.
The barbell will inevitably, because I've done it that way, the barbell will dig into your forearm.
What about if we use a band? What, I gotta think everything around here?
That could work.
A band might work, okay.
That could work.
Give it a try.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Fat grip pull-ups. We have the Rogue, the pull-up bar that has the mace heads. It's got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 different attachments. Mm-hmm. Theirs is the only one I've seen that does this. It's got the big wide mace and the thing. What I'll do is I will do just like, I will just hang. So I'll do a forearm circuit. Something that's moving, and then I'll just hang.
Why haven't I been hanging with Fat Grips? We've been doing all this hanging, and we haven't been doing it with Fat Grips.
How long can you hang for?
If I go in cold? Oh, boy. Man, I really
like hang for a little while.
Yeah, I can hang for a little while. If it's not Fat Grips, just a normal bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably hang for a few minutes.
I feel like you could probably hang for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
3 minutes plus.
I said, yeah. Probably. I would have said 2 or 3. I could probably hang for 2 or 3 minutes without stopping. It's if you want to get crazy with it, you can do single arm hangs. That's another good one.
That's something I want to build up to.
Grabbing right here and grabbing right here. That's some really, really cool stuff. You ever seen that guy who like hangs and then he grabs the plate?
Mr. Infinity?
Plate? Yes.
Yeah. Derek,
that guy.
Yeah, he's fucking amazing.
That's insane. 43 I've never years seen anybody old. Do that. Yep. He's 43 years old. Mm-hmm. That's nuts.
It's insane. Yeah. He's aging backwards.
That's his age is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. People, we've been sold a lie. Just like the shoes. We're not supposed to age the way everybody says we are. They want us to age out. It's man. Mm-mm. No. We can age the reverse if we know what we're doing.
how do you get your clients to comply with the nutrition side of it? Because they could come to you and they could train all the time and they can be there 7 days a week and they're not going to see much if they got a bunch of body fat covering it all up.
Sadly, a lot of times I don't. That's the truth of it. A lot of times, you know, I could preach it, and I do. Of course, I implement a lot of nutrition based stuff with my clients. I do. I try to get them on a program through Octane Fit Garage. It's basically a macro count software that we partner with, and it allows them to get their macros, track it, and get a plan. And of course, that varies based on the individual. But yeah, we have something in place for the people to do. It's kind of a separate thing from training. See, we'll offer training and we'll offer meal plans. And sometimes people will do one or the other, but oftentimes they don't do both. And it's unfortunate. I do, of course, the best I can to implement and to strongly emphasize the importance of that. As you know, it's 80-90% of the equation. So it's pretty much trying to practice what you preach, I think, is the best way to put that into action. So people ask you, hey, what are you doing? I mean, the first thing I tell them, you're like, oh, well, my diet's pretty darn clean. I don't really, eat out. I eat a lot of liver, eat a lot of really, dense protein. I don't eat any processed carbohydrates. That's something that I kind of live by, but, it's getting them to put that into action. Cause that's the hardest part. A lot of diet is so weird. It's people have weird emotional relationships with food. People have, that's oftentimes, I think the biggest problem is it's not the food. It's the relationship people have with it. People look at, the food, I love these. I can't wait. Yeah, it's just so wrong. It's so incorrect. And it's, I love, what you said. I saw the video you did where you had the chains around your neck and you were talking about how we're losing the battle in the number of people who, have passed from diabetes and everything. Right. It's just very tragic and sad. Food can kill you. Just like anything else, if taken to excess. I mean, food is something that is put here for us to sustain and to enjoy to an extent, but it's not meant to be this, source of pleasure that we just tap into every single time we feel down or depressed or whatever. People are so strange with food. And for me, I just, having a healthy understanding of, what do I need in the day and when should I have it? That's just half the battle right there. Yeah. Practicing that. Showing that you're doing that helps with the clients in a big way.
Yeah. Cool. Andrew, want to take us on out of here? You got another question?
Yeah, just one more small question, just because someone like me, let's just say that I was interested in training clients out of my own house. Yeah. I'm one of those people that's going to think of not the worst case scenario, but the what ifs, what if this, what if that.
Oh yeah.
At what point should somebody start thinking about insurance and that sort of thing?
Oh, I mean, probably pretty darn quick. Mm-hmm. If you're going to train anybody out of your house, oh yeah, you need to get insurance. Yeah, I ended up with an umbrella package. This is not as uncommon as you would think. There are certainly insurance companies in place. I have USAA. There are certainly programs that are put into place for you training people at home. Because think about it. There's dance instructors. There's Pilates classes out of homes. There are tons of companies that run fitness-based things out of their home. So there are insurance companies that are certainly, very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Oh, we could get into, they're, insurance, HOA. There are so many things that you need to think about and have, understanding of what it is prior to doing something like this, an operation that, we try to spell it out as best we can and try to give that to the community. But it's very important to do your homework before you just kind of jump the gun and drop $100,000 on equipment.
Definitely. Your neighbors could be a real bitch about it. Your neighbors could be a bunch of pain in the asses because of parking and stuff. If you end up having a following,
Oh yeah. And for us, I'm perfectly located because I'm right by my neighborhood has a community park and I am one house away from that park.
Oh, nice. Wow.
So everybody who comes to my house, whether it's, we just had Charity Witt in, by the way, she came in. Yeah. Yeah. She came in. Dude, her documentary is filmed in our gym.
Sick. Her documentary?
Her documentary. She just did a documentary. Not yet. It's coming. They just filmed it.
Wow. Very cool.
She came in. She did that last week. She's here a couple days ago. So her whole team, I just told them park at the park. They had a van and seven or eight people and she had her people but they're all at the park. Mm-hmm. Nobody, and you just got to walk 15 yards and you get to my house. Everybody comes in through the back. Everything is inside. It's not, and again, I don't do classes. you need to think this out, because of course you want to be conscious of your neighbors. You want to be conscious of if people start complaining, well then yeah, you're going to have an issue. You're going to have, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very important.
Yeah. That's and you awesome. Can also get insurance without having any sort of credentials, which is interesting, but you can do it that way. Yeah. You don't need any certification from any kind of trained people.
No, none. It's a standard liability insurance to do the trick right out of the gate. With us doing the we're doing a swim academy in the back now soon, because we're doing that pool. We've got the instructors and stuff all lined up. So I'm gonna have to probably open up another insurance branch for that, because I know teaching swim lessons in your house is another liability for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody for checking out today's episode. Please make sure you guys like today's episode and subscribe right here on YouTube if you guys are not subscribed already. And drop us a comment down below on anything you guys heard today, anything you found interesting. And if you are on the iTunes or the Spotify side, don't be shy. Come over to YouTube and drop a comment down below as well. And follow the podcast at Mark Bell's Power Project on Instagram, at MB Power Project on TikTok and Twitter. My Instagram and Twitter is at I am Andrew Z. And Seema, where are you at?
Fifth beef stick.
I know, dude. You can share them.
Yeah. Fiery habanero will give you a hot asshole, but it's really good. At Seema Inning on Instagram and YouTube. At Seema Yin Yang on TikTok and Twitter. Brandon, where can people find you?
Just thinking about that hot asshole.
I'm serious.
Thinking about that beef stick.
It's going to come out hot the other way. Anyway.
Strict Vision Athletics. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on TikTok as well. I think if you type in the word strict, any number of those will pop up. I know they've got some weird hyphens there in the middle, but Strict Vision Athletics, TikTok, Instagram. And honestly, if you go to Instagram, you'll find the others because it's all in the link tree.
Yeah, we'll link it down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
Sweet.
I'm at Mark Smelly Bell. Strength is never weakness. Weakness is never strength. Catch you guys later. Bye.